This is the Quality News Network. Turkey wants permission to launch attacks on Kurdish separatists in northern Iraq. The U.S. fears an attack in northern Iraq could destabilize one of the most peaceful regions in the country. According to analysts, the Kurd rebel bases are located near large crude oil pipelines, and the threat of an attack drove oil prices higher today. The nation's three largest banks said they will team up to increase investor appetite for short-term borrowing needs. The Treasury Department introduced the idea for Citigroup, Bank of America, and J.P. Morgan Chase to buy tens of billions of dollars in investments. President Bush scolded Congress for failing to send him a budget. The budget year began October 1st, and federal agencies are operating on a stopgap bill for now. Members of Congress are still deciding on 12 spending bills that keep the government running. Three Americans won the Nobel Economics Prize today. Leonid Hurwitz, Eric Maskin, and Roger Meyerson were awarded the prize for developing a theory that helps explain how sellers can maximize their gains from a transaction. In Iraq, the holy month of Ramadan ended with 3 days of violence. Al-Qaeda and sectarian disputes led to the deaths of at least 57 and the wounding of another 58. A second Iraqi journalist has been killed near Baghdad, according to the local police. Just yesterday, another prominent Iraqi journalist was assassinated. He was a correspondent for the Washington Post. Russian President Vladimir Putin says he will travel to Iran later this week, despite a reported possible assassination attempt. Putin told reporters the trip is a chance to support direct dealings with Iran. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice says the time has come to establish a Palestinian state. Rice made the comments after meeting with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. Rice is touring the Middle East ahead of next week's series of Washington-sponsored peace talks. She met with Israelis yesterday. In Beijing, the Communist Party Congress, held once every 5 years, began this morning with an address by China's president. Reforming political procedures and a more measured pattern of growth are on the agenda. The UN Special Envoy to Myanmar has started a tour of Southeast Asia to address the problems of the brutal Myanmar dictatorship. Today, Envoy Ibrahim Gambari demanded the military regime stop arresting pro-democracy advocates. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business next.
P.M. Forney is on a mission to make life better. His pathway is civility. A professor at Johns Hopkins University, his pioneering study in civility produced a book called Choosing Civility, The 25 Rules of Considerate Conduct. In his book, Forney explains what is civility and what it means to be civil in today's world. He explores the recent decline of civility and offers ways that the direction might be reversed. His brilliant and engaging discourse outlines civility's basic rules, underscoring the values that practicing civility brings to our own lives, as well as to the lives of others. Forney's book is sprinkled with stimulating quotes, such as this by Dwight Curry, who said, "We have a choice about how we behave, and that means we have the choice to opt for civility and grace." For more information, click the Civility button on our website, QualityNewsNetwork.com.
Cancer deaths are dropping more than 2% annually in the U.S. That's according to a report released today. The CDC credits declining tobacco use, earlier detection, and better screening, as well as more effective treatment. Scientists have discovered a new Patagonian dinosaur that's 105 feet tall and thought to be the largest ever found. The dinosaur roamed the Earth some 88 million years ago in Argentina. A surprise early snowstorm dumped a foot of snow in the Colorado Rockies yesterday, signaling an early ski season in the state. California has become the first state in the nation to ban a controversial chemical used to make plastic supple. The chemical is common in baby bottles and other children's products. European plane maker Eurobus delivered its first A380 Super Jumbo jet today. Singapore Airlines took delivery of the double-decker jet, the world's largest passenger plane. The A380 was due to be rolled out 2 years ago. Light sweet crude oil is trading at $88.13 a barrel. Gold is trading up $8.40 at $762 an ounce. And on Wall Street today, the Dow Jones ended down 108 points. The NASDAQ was also down 24 points. And the S&P 500 was down 13 points. There's more on our website, QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Claudia Eisman.
Okay, don't you? Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! I'm not being snotty or anything, but from now on, you have to refer to me differently than you have referred to me in the past. You know, we're very informal around here. Bob, Bill, Guy, Mark, Peter, Joe, John, Billy, and a new program that we added this weekend, Rick. We're all just first-name basis kind of folks. Not anymore. At least not where I'm concerned. You now must refer to me as Bob Kincaid, threat to national security. That's right. Bob Kincaid, threat to national security. Why? Well, I'm not just going to leave that thing hanging up there over the rim. Well, as you know, and to my embarrassment, I publicized this. For several weeks, we had been in discussions with the folks, the West Virginia Democratic Party, to do what we had done last year. And that is to show up at the big annual shindig, commonly known in most states as the annual Jefferson Jackson Day dinner, named for the two men who were most closely associated with the origins and the principles of the Democratic Party, Thomas Jefferson and Andrew Jackson. And we got the go-ahead, got the green light, you know, kind of cool, sort of leverage all this cool internet technology and everything, and create a live audio broadcast of the proceedings. And it was full steam ahead. I went wandering into the building carrying a whole bunch of audio equipment, wearing a suit, of course, and sweating like a snowball in hell. Went up to get our press credentials, and the little dude who 2 days before, Wayne did the arrangements on this stuff, 2 days before had told Wayne, you know, we're all go, good to go, looking forward to seeing you, came running up and said, oh man, I've been trying to get y'all on the phone for the last 3 days. They're not going to let you back there. They who? Security. You're a threat. So I said, yep, no worries, and walked, and, you know, Wayne and I carried the ton of equipment back to the vehicle. See, it was to be quite the to-do, because the biggest celebrity that the Democratic Party has, namely Bill Clinton, was to be there. And they had an overflow crowd. Now, the logistics of this may be a little bit unfamiliar or meaningless, but the event is held every year at the Charleston Civic Center in Charleston, West Virginia, one side of which is a great big sort of exhibit hall, and the other side is the basketball arena, for lack of a better term. It's also where they do concerts and so forth. And every year before, they've had it in the exhibit hall, single story, you know. Well, they had moved it to the arena and put the tables down on the basketball court. I mean, not the court. The wooden flooring was put away. And put up the stage and everything, and we would have been backstage with the internet connection in order to get the feed off the audio. Because it was an overflow crowd. But no. Couldn't happen. Because little old me, little old Wayne, little old Dr. Bill are threats to national security. Now, there was a reception, and I was fortunate enough to be in there and take a couple of pictures. I got Mr. Clinton's autograph for the kids. And apparently, even there, I made the eagle-eyed Secret Service guys nervous as hell, and I kept wondering why. I mean, everybody else was standing up there with cameras taking pictures. I was taking pictures, too. But only upon returning home did I realize what it was that was creeping these guys out so much. One, I had a bag with my camera, because it's not one of those little, you know, credit card, you know, 2.2 megapixel whoses. And this is the real deal. 35 millimeter, you know, I'm a camera nut. And it's got a... I didn't bring the, you know, the hot shoe flash with me or anything. I just... You figured I'd be close enough to use the little pop-up flash. And I did, but it has a function on it that when you focus it, it puts a beam of light onto the subject. You know, it's a optical rangefinder, I guess. And those guys flipped out every time that little red light hit Bill Clinton's face. I mean, nobody went to the ground or anything, but all of a sudden the little, you know, the little nervous head started looking around. And it was only when I got back home that I realized that they thought it was, surprisingly similar to a laser sight thingy. But there was a huge press, and Bill Clinton is still a huge celebrity, and for good reason. He delivered a stunning, stirring address. And he still had the old charm. And he didn't really, as far as I could make out, didn't do a whole lot of politicking for his wife. Didn't do any politicking for anybody else, but talked ideas. And I think that was what, because the crowd was clearly charmed by the man, as crowds around the world still are. I get the idea, and it was, and you know, it's been verified in some history of his administration, that unlike the present occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, Mr. Clinton is able to string together several cogent sentences at a time, never at any time saying the word nuclear. And that he had written his own remarks, and that he has a sense for the magic of the language. And at one point, he had stopped and the applause had died off. And he said, "So I want to tell you, it's an exciting time to be a Democrat." And the crowd went wild. And then the crowd died back down again. And he said, "But it is a sobering time to be an American." And launched off into the quite possibly irremediable damage that has been done to this nation by this misadministration over the last, yea, verily, lo and behold, 6.5 long, long, miserable, tortured years. Told some good stories. He said, "I was in Africa just the other day, a couple of weeks ago. East Central Africa," some such geographic compass point description.
And he said, people came from miles around to see me and for us to talk. And we were talking about AIDS and malaria. Because our program to get AIDS medication and to get malaria medications to Africa are beginning to bear fruit.
And pointed out that one country, I forget which, now has more deaths from malaria than from AIDS, and that's a fairly recent turnaround. But he said they don't hate. He said they don't hate America there. They still have a good opinion of us. These Muslims who came to see me, he said, didn't come with the weight of Iraq on their backs. They came knowing that in that particular instance, the United States of America is fulfilling the role that the United States of America should fulfill. And that is where we have to get this country back to. He also talked about domestic things. He talked about education. He talked about health care. He pointed out the fact that
we're very good at curing sick people. We're not so good at keeping people from getting sick.
And pointed out the fact that he had had the best health care and you know, with the heart surgery and everything. And the great care that was taken of him. Now me, I'm a little bit of a cynic, so I was able to sit there and say, yeah. But by the same token, Mr. Clinton, in all fairness, you are a participant in the best socialized medicine healthcare system in the world. But the members of Congress, Democrat and Republican alike for the most part, and the members of God knows this administration, don't think that the 4,000 people watching you, sir, are entitled to the same quality of health care that you yourself received. So we're good at curing sick people who are able to have sufficient coverage and care to receive that cure. But a lot of us don't get that care. Some of us who have gotten high-quality care have been slimed by the Republican Party for getting it. Witness the recent attack on little Graham Frost. So, yeah. I mean, a point made and a point taken, but a point, I think, that has to be modified. But he very definitely had the old magic. And people were queuing up to him in the little reception where we were. Like it was... Well, it was moving toward me. And I said something like, I swear that this crowd's getting so thick that if I hear Who music, I'm out of here. And all of a sudden his little head perked up and a little giggle came out. Because, you know, when people want to get to the person they want to get to, and for some reason or another it suddenly matters, they don't give a damn who they're running over to get there. I mean, perfectly full-grown men and women who in other situations probably exhibit perfectly good manners suddenly didn't give a damn, and they were going to stomp on anybody to get where they were going. I mean, I had a dude that was... every bit of, you know, probably 350 pounds, and I'm no shrinking violet, and all of a sudden it was like we were under the boards at a basketball game for the Raymond Burr fan club. Arms up and elbows rolling. Man, he still commands the excitement. In a way, it sort of reminded of that tale, and I assume it to be true, it may be apocryphal, of the time just after he had retired from baseball and he was married to Marilyn Monroe. Talking about Joe DiMaggio. When Marilyn came home from a U.S. tour and looked at him and said, "Oh, Joe, there were all those people and they were cheering just for me. Can you imagine what that's like?" And Joe, Jolton Joe, recently gone from the stage of baseball and baseball's grandest stage, Yankee Stadium, looked at her and said, "Yeah. Yeah, I can." And so I imagine it's good for Bill Clinton to go and hear the roars of approval and see the wistful look in people's eyes. Because you hear the man speak, and there is a genuineness to it, an ability to identify problems that seem insurmountable and then come back with suggestions that yield not only a potential solution, but some hope beyond it as well. It was exciting. Got a couple of great photographs. I'll ship those along to our news ninjas, and maybe we can put them up on the website. I was the guy with the camera and had nobody with me, so I couldn't say, "Here, take my picture." So instead, I sufficed to take pictures of him as he got close and as he was signing the autograph for Ferg. But all told, it was a little bit frustrating because I'd gone over to our good friends at Democratic Underground and posted that we would in fact be carrying the thing live, and I got back home and immediately just posted an apology. Wasn't our fault. I got my shower, I shaved, and after shave, the balm, because I've got the skin care products and stuff, and put on a little bit of decent cologne, and got all dressed and got the tie knotted just so, and drove on down there with all my equipment, never knowing, that in fact, as I rolled along down the little two-lane road that goes from here to Charleston, that I was, in fact, a threat to national security. And I told the story a couple of times along the way about one of the little-known figures of American history, of whom I'm very fond, Jeff Biggers, who wrote The United States of Appalachia, put me onto her story, and that is the story of Ann Royal, who in, I guess, what, the 1830s, 1840s, whenever it was that Martin Van Buren was president, went down to the banks of the Potomac River and collected his clothing because he was naked in the river. Yeah, just going for a swim. And told him that she would be happy to return his clothing to him as soon as he promised to get behind the newfangled telegraph box. And he capitulated, seeing how he didn't want to walk back to the White House all naked and stuff. And that was the Washington of the early to mid-19th century. And how far we have come when ordinary humanity, each and every member of ordinary humanity, ordinary American citizens, are deemed a potential threat to a retired president. It's just kind of sad, But then again, I guess if you recall, Mr. Clinton drove the Secret Service nuts because he does love to intermingle and interact with people and jumping out of the car and shaking hands along the road. And "Mr. President, you can't do that." "Oh, hell, most they can do is shoot me." But we do, our government is more afraid of us than they are of, and I don't necessarily ascribe this to Mr. Clinton, but our government is more afraid of us than it is of Osama bin Laden. That especially applies to the Bush administration. Because, see, there's a bunch of us liberals and progressives out there. You, me, us, we, And we say crazy stuff, like impeach the bastards, talking about Bush and Cheney. And we get upset with the likes of Nancy Pelosi, who has earned her nickname of Nancy Capitulosi. I proudly invented that one. Because she thinks she's more focused on gaining more political power in the Congress than she is on following the Constitution of the United States, come what may. Those of you who are familiars to this program, who are frequenters of this program, know that one of my favorite books is Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird, in which Atticus Finch explains that sometimes there are fights we fight because not fighting the fight would leave us less than who we hope we are. Well, impeachment's one of those fights. But Mrs. Pelosi doesn't see it that way. She has her eyes on her prize. And her prize is getting to be majority leader over a significantly larger majority. Although one wonders what she hopes to do with the power, since she, you know, with a few notable examples, hasn't done much with it so far. Harry Reid's keeping his powder dry. He just never bothered telling us it was all baby powder instead of gunpowder. But the rest of the world does seem to be catching on. I was doing a little wandering around today. Like I said, I've been back and forth at Democratic Underground. And I noted that, someone posted a thread about the fact that Ed Schultz has finally caught on to the idea that impeachment is something that should be seriously considered. Now, I suggested that Ed is a bit of a Johnny-come-lately to the argument, since, you know, Mike Malloy's been talking about it for a while, and I know folks have been talking about it for a while on Tom Hartman's program, and I'd like to say proudly that I've been talking about it since, I think, about July 2003, when the Valerie Plame story first broke. So, you know, that's okay. Welcome to the fight. Now, the difference is, for the most part, that right-wing politicians will listen to their grassroots and generally take action consistent with it. Witness what they did with the immigration bill. Right-wing, wingnut, bloodthirsty zealots had a fit over it. And suddenly Republican politicians were backing away as fast as they could go. On the other hand, we talk about impeachment, and Mrs. Capitulosi gives statements where she says she doesn't understand, you know, we don't understand. She just couldn't do that. You know, like, you don't understand. I can't eat spaghetti with my shrimp fork. That's not done. And yet, and this is where, you know, I'm just not on the bus, because I see the Constitution and the oath you take to support and defend it as not subject to political considerations. You do what you must do because it is required of you. Otherwise, if you don't do it, then history looks and says, when that person was called, that person was found wanting. And I would not have that said about me. And I've got a pretty good sense for those of you who share your time listening to this program, and I'm pretty confident in saying that you would not have it said of you either. Would you? And yet, at the same time, I suppose it's true that the common sense approach of impeach now is, in fact, beginning to get significant legs among even people who consider themselves to be so-called moderates, like Ed Schultz. So the thing Saturday night was a lot of fun because, you know, and it was. I mean, after I got over the initial of finding out that I'm a threat to national security, you know, guys, I'm on your side. But once I got over that and started wandering around and talking to folks and mingling and carrying on and so forth, it was nice just to sort of rub elbows with other garden variety grassroots Democrats. Because really, this Jefferson Jackson Day dinner in West Virginia is a sort of, it's like the Super Bowl. It's like, you know, NASCAR race day. If you're serious about the party, you're there. And I got to talk to a lot of folks. And there was an after party at the nearby Shrine Auditorium. And there was more elbow rubbing. You know, I was there. Wayne was there. Dr. Bill and his lovely wife were there. And I think we all had a very nice time. But you talk to people, and you find out where their head is. A couple of things I'd like to point out. Upstairs, as people would have walked into the auditorium, there was a table. Well, the downstairs was just tons of Hillary stuff. I'm sorry, tons of stuff for Senator Clinton. On the other hand, upstairs, there was an Obama table, and there was tables for the re-election of our various and sundry Congress people. Saw a couple of other presidential campaign tables. But I was saddened to note that there was no Dennis Kucinich table. Maybe I should have taken care of that. But I know that there are a number of people in this state who are not followers, it makes it sound like a religion, who prefer Dennis Kucinich, who are excited about his candidacy, no table. And later on, I was talking with a fellow from, I think, Mercer County, and he was talking about the various, and I said, well, you know, me, I'm behind Kucinich, I just am. And I said, you know, the guy was right about the war. He was right about health care. He's right about these so-called free trade agreements, and he's been right all along about them. And he goes, well, I never even heard of him. I went, well, dang. And I was reminded of one of the dangers that we have. We progressives, we who hang out here in the Head On Radio Network programming, in the chat rooms, emailing and calling the programs and so forth. And that is that we make certain assumptions about the information level. Because we are all connected, because we are all information junkies, because we are all watching the process like a hawk, we tend to make an assumption that others are doing the same, and they're not. Now, if somebody wandered into the chat room over at headonradionetwork.com and said, who the heck is Dennis Kucinich? One, you would, most of you, be able to inform and educate that person pretty quickly. And generally pretty passionately. But you would also be taken back for a moment that there is somebody who doesn't know who he is. And there are lots of them. Lots and lots of them. Met another young man I'm hoping to be talking to in the fairly near future. He does a liberal, progressive, whatever you want to call it, talk show on the campus of Marshall University once a week. I think he said 6 to 8 on Tuesdays. I'm going to give a listen to the show, and he said he would be tickled to death if we added it to the stream. And you know what? I'll do that. Because it inspires me to see that he's out there doing it once a week. I don't know if he's doing it once a week because that's the only time he can get on the student station, or if he's actually serious about his studies and therefore can only do it once a week. But I want us to get this guy's voice out, because that's part and parcel of what the horn is about. About developing voices. About building an infrastructure of people who can and will take the fight to the other side. It's what we have to be about. And to see a guy who's in college now, who's doing it and building the talent for it, makes me feel good, because I know that when the generation that's there now and my generation move on, that there's going to be that there's the hope that there'll be somebody stepping up to the microphone to continue the fight. I find that very, very inspiring. Let's see. I got a blinking light on the phone. Let's see if there's anybody there.
Hey, yes, Bob, it's Mark.
Hey, Mark.
I know people like when you and I tough it out a bit. And I was listening to the show and what you were saying about Nancy Pelosi. And I don't know, maybe, you know, you're from the left wing of the Democratic Party and I'm from the center of the Democratic Party. But let me ask you this question.
Okay.
Do you think, and keep in mind, as listeners know, and as I know, I've been calling for impeachment for several years now as well. I certainly think it's justified in the Constitution. But let me ask you the political question.
Mm-hmm.
If the Democrats were to narrowly pass a bill of impeachment, and I'm not even sure they could do that, frankly, in the House, I think it's pretty obvious there would be no conviction. We simply don't have the two-thirds vote in the Senate for Cheney or for Bush.
Right.
Given that, what is the... I mean, I know you, is the only purpose of impeachment to make the political statement that it's right to do?
No.
And do you see how it can hurt the party politically, because that's what Nancy Pelosi is concerned about?
I see that argument, Mark, but no, it's not just about making the statement. At this point in time, given the fact that the Congress has shown a willingness to rubber stamp virtually everything George Bush wants in the way of prosecuting his war, this is the only way to slow it down. This is about ending the war as much as anything else.
This isn't the only way to slow it down. I would argue it's not even the most effective way to slow
it down. I didn't say it was the most effective way, Mark. I said it was. I said it was the only way because so far, every time he sticks his hand out and says, "You got to support the troops and give me another billion for, you know, for Blackwater," we do.
You know, I don't think they're going to do it this time. Now, you know, you're always the pessimist on the Democratic Party, and I'm always the optimist, and oftentimes we're both wrong. But I don't think they're going to give the next $100 billion the way they gave the last $100 billion in June. I really don't think so. I mean, we'll see. We'll see.
Well, we've had talk from the people at Appropriations and stuff. You know, David Obey came out and said, you know, I think we ought to have a war tax.
That idea.
And you know how long that lasted, Mark?
A few minutes.
4 hours, about, until Nancy Pelosi said, that she'd come over and, you know, put a flaming bag of poop on his doorstep and ring the doorbell and run. I don't know what she told him.
I like the idea of a war tax very, very much.
I do, too. Let the people who want it pay for it.
Let's pay for it. If Republicans love this war, then they should pay for it.
Right.
How about a war tax among war supporters?
Well, right. You know, how about a war tax? If we can pay for the S-chip program on the backs of cigarette smokers, why don't we pay for the war on the back of people who buy ammunition?
There you go. That would make sense. People who like to shoot things.
Yeah.
Or just simply a tax.
Or how about an explosives tax on the people who are using 3 million pounds of explosives on the state of West Virginia every day?
Or how about a huge tax on all no-bid contracts with the military?
Sure, it's all doable, Mark.
Because I just look in the newspaper, Blackwater, before September 11th, made about $700,000 a year. Now they're making $1.2 billion a year. And that's a pretty hefty increase. That's way more than 1,000 times increase, close to 2,000 times.
Yeah, but if you start making them pay taxes, it starts looking like a kickback. Wait, we're already doing that. No, it's not just...
But I do understand. What Nancy Pelosi does is she counts votes. So that's what she does.
Oh, let me take you somewhere else for a minute, Mark.
Okay. I don't think you think impeachment can win. I think we agree on that politically, right?
Oh, I don't think it can happen in the Senate, no. I think you can get a bill out of the House.
Even that, I have to tell you, is an uphill battle. But even but assuming it does.
But you're a darn fine trial lawyer. Okay? There are fine trial lawyers in the House, and there are fine lawyers on Democratic staffs. If you have evidence, and see, I'm not talking about a stained blue dress, because again, maybe this is a case of, you know, me living in the little atmosphere that we live in here, where everything seems so plain and so easy to comprehend. If you put up evidence and you prosecute a case and you prove to the satisfaction of, you know, the people in the committee and then the people on the floor of the House that George Bush has done the things he's done, you know, such as, you know, the habeas corpus thingy, you know, it's only in the Constitution. If you prove the illegal warrantless wiretapping, if you prove the outing of Valerie Plame, and the list goes on and on and on. If you prove
the first one to talk about that list.
If you prove the falsity of the pretense under which we attacked the people of Iraq, and you've got good lawyers doing it, how can you do anything but get that bill out? At that point in time, people are either voting on political basis or they're ignoring the evidence altogether.
Because Bob, the House of Representatives is not a jury. They don't decide based on the evidence. They decide based on politics. That's particularly in cases of impeachment. Now, it may be cases where, you know, they might go and do the right thing on this bill or that bill and go against the leadership. That happens. But when it comes to a question of impeachment, they are going to go based on politics. They're going to go based on polls at home. And while you have not quite half of the American people supporting impeachment, you're not going to have half of the House supporting impeachment. And that's, let me suggest to you that that's where I would prefer a progressive focus. Not so much on attacking Nancy Pelosi, though, you know, feel free to say whatever you want to say, but on persuading the majority of American people, and frankly, we need a supermajority. For impeachment and removal of the president, we're going to need at least 70%.
And a twofer. It's got to be a twofer. It's got to be Cheney and Bush together.
Well, absolutely. It's got to be a twofer. And that's an extremely radical thing, totally apart from the fact that Bush and Cheney are the most reprehensible, illegal, war criminal president and vice president we've ever had in American history. Totally apart from that, you can see how removing the president and the vice president in just a theoretical way, not with these two men in mind, is an extremely radical thing, because then you put someone of the other party, in this case it would be Nancy Pelosi, would become president of the United States. It's exactly what they tried to do with Andrew Johnson in 1868. At that time, there was no vice president. Lincoln had been shot. He became president, and at that time, there was nothing in the Constitution to let him appoint a new vice president. So he was the president alone. If they got rid of him, then the other party in Congress would have taken over. That's a very, very strong radical step. And to do that, you have popular support. When Nixon was going to be impeached, and he would have been impeached, and he would have been removed from office, you had the great majority of the American people thinking he should be removed from office. And I just think that this is a Congress that follows rather than leads. And I'm not so sure that's the wrong political thing for them to do. I wish...
Mark, I'll go along. Who are they following, for the love of God?
They're following the American people. If polls show that 70% of Americans wanted him impeached and removed from office, and Cheney too, I guarantee you it's the first bill Nancy Pelosi... It's not that she doesn't have the will.
Okay, but polls show that 70% of the American people don't support the war. They keep funding it.
That's a different case. That's why I think they're going to back off. I really do. It's not. It's in the high 60s. It's not 70 yet. But no, I think you're going to find the Democrats going to be a lot stronger on the war. That's my only point, is that, yeah, the impeachment is inherently a political thing. That's why the political branches do it. That's why presidents are not removed from office by courts. That's why it's in the Constitution that way. And I fully support impeachment. I think it's the right thing to do, but I understand that politically, until the majority of the American people are on board, it would be political suicide.
Okay, let's work by a quick analogy here, Mark.
Okay.
A few weeks ago, there was the flap over whether or not presidential candidates should say that they would not use nukes in a first strike capacity. Okay?
Okay.
And the argument was put forward and apparently got legs and was followed and were, you know, held up, that, you know, a president should never say anything like that.
Don't close off your options.
Yeah, right. You should never say never. Never say never.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Nancy Pelosi hadn't been speaker for a day when she said impeachment is off the table.
She actually said it before. She said it before she became speaker.
Okay, fair enough. You're making my case for me.
Okay.
Why in God's name would she say that?
Why? Because she felt that there were people in some districts who would be concerned about putting the Democrats in power, particularly independents, not Democrats, but, you know, a good 20% of this nation or more is independents. They are the swing voters. They're heavily supporting the Democratic Party right now by more than 2-to-1 ratio. And she feared that independents might not support Democrats if they felt that all they were going to get back, political payback. You know, you impeach Bill Clinton, we're going to impeach your president.
And we're so incompetent that we can't draw the distinction between a million dead Iraqi civilians in a stained blue dress.
We can, Bob. The question is whether independents can. And the answer is, according to the polls, no. Now, maybe it's because the horn isn't popular enough and is not on enough media sources. But the media that's out there now, apart from the horn, and maybe now Ed Schultz, is not talking about it. That's why I said it's not so much Nancy Pelosi as it is the American people. We have to persuade the American people that impeachment is the right thing to do. I think that's the cart before the horse. Get that done, and Nancy Pelosi's a breeze. She isn't the thing standing in the way. What's standing in the way is the American people, to the extent they follow the media. That's just how I see it.
Well, there's the 800 pound gorilla in the room, the media, because the media will spin it as
political payback. Of course they will.
They will, you know, it'll be Clinton all over again.
That's right.
It's part of the same argument I make about Senator Clinton's presidential campaign. It's a monolithic organization that spent 15 years waiting for this moment.
Yeah.
And frankly, you know, she says she's going to fight back, but you know, how's she going to fight back? She's not going to have any cooperation from ABC, CBS, NBC, the rest of the alphabet soup bunch, because they're going to run footage of Dan Burton in Indiana shooting a truckload of watermelons to prove that she killed Vince Foster.
I don't know. Sure, Fox will. No question, Fox will. I don't think they're going to go back to Dan Burton.
Dan Burton's my example.
They're tired of Whitewater. They know that nothing was found that did anything wrong. I think those questions have been kind of asked and answered.
Yeah, but Flimball's already running the stuff, Mark.
Oh, well, of course, Flimball's doing it, and Fox will do it. I'm not talking about wholly owned media subsidiaries of the Republican Party. I'm talking about...
You mean like GE, who owns NBC?
Well...
Or Viacom, that owns CBS?
That's true.
Or Disney, that owns ABC?
I think that reporters see it as old news. You know, I remember when I did the research to prove that George Bush was AWOL. And I proved it in 2003, long before Dan Rather. And I have the whole proof along with documents up on my website.
Yeah.
And at the time, I remember I actually was at a radio convention where Matt Drudge was there. Because I go to these radio conventions, which are 99% right-wingers and me. I don't know why I do it. I guess I'm a masochist. But in any case... And I said to Matt Drudge, you know, you put in all this stuff about Bill Clinton, why won't you put in this stuff about Bush? And he basically said, look, it may be true, but it's not my job to put it up. So, okay, fine, he's a right-winger. That his job is only to smear left-wingers. I get it. But then the mainstream news saw it as old news because it was kind of like inoculation. It was a little bit raised in 2000, wasn't really addressed, and then it was old news. This is exactly why Karl Rove was so brilliant, evil but brilliant. With you know, the whole Fortunate Son book, and you know, I leaked it. It's like an inoculation. You get a little bit of it, and then they think it's already been done. I do think America is sick of Whitewater, and they're sick of Monica Lewinsky, and they do not want to go back there. And I'm talking about independents now. Because they're the ones who decide elections. Democrats would impeach George Bush in a second, no question. And Republicans will attack the Clintons forever in a second. I'm talking about that middle 20-25% that decides elections. And that's who I think Nancy Pelosi is looking toward. Now, you know, I was very harsh on her on the Iraq supplemental. And if they give in on this next Iraq war bill, the Democrats are going to have a fit. I don't think she's going to. I just really don't think so. I hope I'm right. But I understand what she's saying on impeachment. Not that it's wrong, but that it's impossible right now.
Well, you know...
You feel free to disagree. I just, having been on the Hill, they do count the votes a lot.
Oh, I know they do. I know they do.
I mean, S. Chip, she tried, I think, very hard to get Republicans to override Bush's veto. And she just said the other day that she doesn't think it's possible. They only needed 14.
I know. I know. It's pathetic. And how many of those are Democrats?
There were only 8, and I'm sure, like Dennis Kucinich, who thought the bill wasn't strong enough, I'm sure he would vote for the override.
He said he was going to, but I'm thinking more of people like Gene Taylor in Mississippi who
Gene Taylor is a Dino. You've heard of Renos. He's a Democrat.
Oh yeah, yeah, I know. But you know, and he won't pay a political price for that.
Honestly, I don't know where he stood. I'd have to look at the vote to see where he was.
He voted against it initially.
If she were the difference, she could get him in line. I do know there was 14 Republicans, what she said.
Well, you know, we've run rather far afield, but not really, because it's all the same topic, Mark.
It's all about when do you.
Well, okay, let me ask you this. These people pay so much attention to polling data and polling details. Have they not seen the polls that indicate that they have a lower approval rating than George Bush?
Well, you know, even those polls are kind of tricky, because they show that the Democrats have a much higher rating in Congress than the Republicans in Congress.
Yes, that's
and
true.
And it's eventual that decides election, not the overall number. Americans traditionally have a very low opinion of Congress. I don't think it's ever been over 50%. In polling history, because Americans like their member of Congress, but they hate Congress in total. Every poll from now back 40 years shows that, you know, 55% of Americans.
Well, and older than that, you've got
Congress.
Older than that, you've got Mark Twain saying, you know, assume that you are an idiot, assume that you are a member of Congress. But I repeat
right.
myself.
Oh yeah. I mean, Congress is traditionally hated.
But still, when you're at those kind of levels. And you realize that you've got a little bit of an uphill battle. There's an old saying out there, Mark, that says, "Do something even if it's wrong. Do something."
Well, I think you're going to. I think Congress is doing something. I really do.
Mark,
I think
Mark,
they're doing what's politically possible.
Your bottle is half full. Mine is half empty. And
yeah,
maybe,
I know. We're both looking at the same data, and I'm agreeing with you. They should do more, but I understand the political limitations. And it's just something that I think, having worked in Congress, we had activists all the time come up to Democrats and say, why don't you do this, why don't you do this, why don't you do this? And we would say, hey, you get us the votes, we'll do it. It's not that our heart's not with you. We just don't have the votes.
Well, the Armenian thing, I think, is a little bit of genius, actually, because I've seen where Democrats, liberals, progressives are asking, you know, why are they doing this now? Well, the fact of the matter is, they're throwing in the punch bowl for Georgia's rosy little relationship with Turkey, and it might turn out to cause some real problems on his ability to continue to wage the war. You know, what did Robert Gates say?
I think it's just this isn't. I mean, I remember the Armenian genocide bill when I was there. This something that's been tried for probably more than a decade now. It's the Armenian American community. It's the one thing that they focus on mostly. They're, it's 2 million votes, and they see it as a very important symbol. The one thing that concerns me, and I support that bill, is that I kind of feel like we need to clean our own house first. We need to apologize for slavery. We need to have some kind of resolution that talks about all the land and lives we took from Native Americans, because those are our two greatest crimes as Americans. And then, by all means, I mean, it's not that I'm against labeling the Armenian genocide. I am. But I do see it as a little hypocritical, and we haven't cleaned our own house.
Well, sure it is. But you know, being hypocritical is nothing new.
No,
we can't occupy the moral high ground anymore. We can't fuss and scrub. I mean, my God, did you see the comments that Condoleezza Rice made about Russia?
I'm really scared about Russia.
Well,
really scared about Russia.
But
remember,
you know,
the evil empire.
Yeah, but for her
they're a lot more dangerous than Al-Qaeda.
Mark, for Condoleezza Rice to stand there and say, I think that power has become too centralized in Russia. We are not sure of the actual. We're not sure of the actual authority of the Duma. it went on and on. It was just a screamer.
The sad thing is that it's the right thing to say. It's just that she has no credibility saying it. The sad thing is, it's that something that we do want to press Russia on, and we traditionally did for decades, and the Helsinki Accords, and you know, maybe I think that helped bring the Soviet Union down. This is what we should be saying if we had the moral authority to say it, which we don't anymore. We used to. We used to have that moral authority.
Yeah, but it's gone. It's gone.
I know.
And, you know, I am what I am and will never stop being it. I understand political reality, so to speak. But I also think that I'm one of these geeks that takes the idea of taking an oath very, very seriously. And I yearn for people that feel about it the same way that I do.
Bob, I agree with you that these are the most lawless individuals who've ever been in the White House. I agree with you that these people need to be impeached. I can give a long list of crimes just as you can. We could have a little contest to see who can name the most illegal actions. That might be fun someday. All I'm saying is that sometimes I think progressives see something like that and they take out all their anger at the Democratic leadership instead of what I think, and that's okay. There's I have no problem really with that. But I do think that attention is more profitably focused on convincing fellow Americans, on sitting down with your friend who's an independent, or even a moderate, free-thinking Republicans, and there are a few of those around, not many, but a few, and sitting down and going through and telling them why torture is un-American, telling them why putting someone in jail without, you know, a lawyer or charges is un-American, and why, you know, we don't have to fear a nuclear weapon if we don't torture people. And I just think if we convince our fellow Americans, we can do as much or more good in the march toward impeachment, which probably won't happen, but at least in standing on the right moral high horse than just complaining about the Democratic leadership. That's all I'm trying
to say. Well, I don't want it to seem that I'm just complaining about the Democratic leadership. I'm complaining about the Democratic leadership for very, very, what I perceive to be very, very good reasons.
No, I understand.
Now, the other side of that is, of course, there's historical documentation that the framers didn't intend, and I'm running out of time because I got a guest coming at 7:05. But the framers didn't intend for impeachment to be a political process. They talked in very plain terms about presidents breaking the law and being removed from office for it.
Yeah.
Of course, I mean,
but they gave it to the House and the Senate to make it. So,
well, you couldn't.
I think they knew it would be somewhat political.
You couldn't.
It's both. It's political and it's legal.
They had to give it to the House and the Senate because the president appoints the members of the Supreme Court.
Right. No,
so
look,
apart from referendum and recall, where else do you go?
No, that would be it. That would be it.
Well, Mark, it's always
Bob,
fun. Now,
I always
now,
enjoy talking with you.
Now, what's now? Wait. What's this?
You oh,
got,
okay.
You've got one of these creepy people from Koofy coming on your show.
Who's Koofy?
I wonder. Christians United for Israel. Koofy.
Right. No, I invited them because we had that long discussion a couple weeks ago about who the Christian Zionists were. And you had said that basically they're anti-Semites in disguise. So I thought we'd test that theory.
Okay.
Let's invite them. Let's ask them tough questions. Let's find out where they come from. And I invite you and every one of the listeners to call in and challenge them as well. Let's find out. I don't know Koofy as an organization. Maybe you do.
Yeah. I mean, if this guy is with Koofy, I mean, that's what I'm trying to find out.
Yeah, he is. Is he? That's not Reverend Hagee, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, that's why I asked you. You said you were having the head man on. I said, you're getting Reverend Hagee?
Yeah, no, I guess he's the regional guy. He's the Washington, D.C. guy.
Okay.
But, well, no, I like going into the... I mean, I would have James Dobson on my show if I could get him. I would.
Oh, sure.
And I'd ask him a lot of tough questions.
Well, and you're going to ask a lot of tough questions.
I plan to.
The question remains whether they will be answered.
Well, we will find out.
All right.
Bob, I invite you and all the listeners to call in. Bob, if you want to take him on, call in.
Or
let's
open the microphone, as the case may be.
Exactly.
Good enough, Mark. Good talking
to
you. I always enjoy these.
Mark Thompson, my Eminem host. Those of you that never heard me on XM, you're going to hear my co-host, who's a real leader in the African-American community. He's on Wednesday. So it's a real big week on the Inside Scoop.
Wow, cool.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, good deal, Mark. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Later.
Bye.
Bye now. Coming up in the next hour, we've got some news coming up, but after the news, a conversation with Coal River Mountain Watch's Judy Bonds. I had some requests for this, so I wanted to make sure that we got Judy on, because there have been some little victories lately, and we're going to talk about what's going on as we try to change the face, or try to keep people from changing the face of West Virginia, I guess would be the best way to put it. At any rate, that's what's coming after the news. Right now, we've got news from Quality News Network on the way. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush is telling Congress that he wants a federal budget on his desk sooner rather than later. The budget year began at the first of the month with no spending plan in place. A stopgap bill is filling the need for now. A decision on 12 spending bills that keep the federal government running is holding up the pace. Three American professors won the Nobel Prize for Economics. They'll get that prize for development of a theory of how to maximize profit from a single sales transaction. Turkey wants permission to launch attacks on Kurdish separatists in northern Iraq, one of the most peaceful regions in the country. Experts say Kurd rebel bases are located near large crude oil pipelines, and the threat of an attack sent oil prices to record highs today. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice met today with Palestinian leaders at the start of a four-day Middle Eastern trip. She's preparing for next month's series of peace talks, saying the time has come to establish a Palestinian state. In Iraq, it was a violent ending to the holy month of Ramadan. Deadly attacks over the last 3 days, blamed mostly on al-Qaeda, led to at least 57 deaths. Another 58 were wounded. Also this weekend, a prominent Iraqi journalist assassinated a correspondent for The Washington Post. In addition, two U.S. soldiers were killed in separate incidences. Pope Benedict has called for the release of two Iraqi Catholic priests kidnapped on Saturday in a northern Iraqi province. Russian President Vladimir Putin now says he will delay his visit to Iran amid reports that he's a target for assassination in that country. He could visit Tehran later this week, and no word yet. In Beijing, the Communist Party Congress, held once every 5 years, began this morning with an address by China's president. Reforming political procedures and a more measured pattern of growth are on the agenda. The UN special envoy to Myanmar has started a tour of Southeast Asia to address the problems of the brutal Myanmar dictatorship. In Madrid, trial began today for more than two dozen suspected terrorists who allegedly planned to bomb the very courthouse in which they are being tried. And Idaho Senator Larry Craig filed an appeal today challenging a judge's ruling that he cannot withdraw an earlier guilty plea that threatens his political career. And you are listening to the Quality News Network. We'll take a check of science and business news that's just ahead. First, this message.
Huelhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their local banking.
So what do you look for when you decide where you're going to put all your millions?
Well, I haven't printed up enough to put it in the bank yet, but I guess for convenience, and pretty much it's like a grocery market. You get to meet the people there, and you build a little rapport with some of them.
You know, it's a local bank, but it's part of a network of local banks that give you big bank services.
Everything that I need as far as banking is concerned, they have it. Online banking is great for me. So I just like the services that they offer.
You ever taken your dog Cindy to the bank?
As a matter of fact, when I went to open my account, she was with me.
Ah!
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we have a horse come through one of these days. We've got a lot of cowboys coming in and out of here, too.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
Cancer death rates are dropping more than 2% annually in the U.S. That's according to a report released today. The CDC credits declining tobacco use, earlier detection, and better screening, as well as more effective treatment. California has become the first state in the nation to ban a controversial chemical used to make plastic supple. The chemical is common in baby bottles and other children's products. The nation's three largest banks will team up to buy tens of millions of dollars in investments. Experts say the move could promote investor appetite for short-term borrowing needs. Rupert Murdoch's News Corp launches its business television channel today. That's the Fox Business Network. Murdoch is betting he'll win in head-to-head competition against General Electric's CNBC. General Electric, by the way, posted a 14% increase in quarterly profit on revenues of $5.54 billion. America Online will cut its workforce by 20% worldwide. 1,200 AOL U.S. workers get pink slips tomorrow. Citigroup today posted a quarterly profit plunge of 57%. Nation's leading bank has been hard hit by mortgage loan losses. Light sweet crude trading at $86.13 a barrel, up $2.44 a barrel. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow dropped 108 points to end at 13,984, NASDAQ down 25, S&P 500 off 13. More on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All righty then, about 7 minutes past the hour. A little reminder for you, or, well, it's not a reminder because you didn't know this before, so you can't be reminded of it now, can you? The 25th of October, 10 days from now, I'll be down in Institute, West Virginia, on the campus of West Virginia State University, broadcasting a live event featuring Scott Ritter. We will broadcast his address and then, with any luck at all, maybe have a few moments for conversation with him. I hope you will join us for that. Scott Ritter is another who is calling for impeachment. And see, that I was a little short on time with Mark, and I didn't quite get a chance to ask him. But, you know, Mark being a trial lawyer and stuff, he's got to be concerned with ideas of precedent. And what kind of precedent are we setting for a president to let the things that have happened with this president go by without so much as a peep? And as far as you know, being rough on Nancy Pelosi or Harry Drypowder Reid, all I can say is I made a promise to myself and to this audience that we would be harder on a Democratic majority than we ever were on a Republican majority, because we expect Republicans to act like they do. We expect far more from Democrats, because we expect them to uphold our ideals of justice, social justice, of ethics, of some degree of political morality. And therefore, I can't just watch Nancy Capitolosi waltz along saying things like, impeachment is off the table, and let it go by unheralded. On the phone with us now, joining us from Southern West Virginia, a very good friend of mine, a very dear friend of mine. I'm proud to call her a very dear friend of mine, Judy Bonds, with Coal River Mountain Watch and tireless activist in the attempt to keep West Virginia still looking at least reasonably like West Virginia and to slow the ethnic cleansing of mountain people that is taking place in the southern end of our state. Judy, thank you so much for taking a little time to join me.
Well, you're very welcome, Bob, and yes, you know, we got to save that endangered hillbilly.
No kidding, because there's a lot there worth saving. And, you know, it's felt a lot like an uphill battle a lot of the time, and it still does feel like an uphill battle, although maybe that we should call it a no-hill battle. But we've had a little bit of good luck, a little bit of something to cheer about lately, haven't we?
Absolutely. We won a case a few months ago about the sediment ponds in the valley fields. And, of course, the Bush administration has appealed that decision. But in the meantime, the Judge Chambers' decision stands, and a coal company decided that they were going to test the judge's spirits, and they wanted to go ahead and start another valley field. And so our lawyer called, and we decided, I don't think so. So we blocked it with a temporary restraining order, and the judge ruled with us. And it's one of the best rulings I have ever read. Point by point, even the Jobs case. And we're just thrilled with it. We're just absolutely thrilled with it.
Well, he's, among other things, he said that you all had made your case and made it well on a variety of points. What were those strong points, Judy?
Well, the strongest point was economic gain is not to be pursued at all costs, and certainly not when it is contrary to the law. And in addition, he said that in addition to seeing the policies of federal law enforced and upheld, the public citizens have an interest in maintaining environmental quality in the places they choose to live. The public has an interest in ensuring the safety and health of all of its members, and in ensuring the integrity of the biological and ecological systems in their communities. And it's just absolutely wonderful. It says, he also goes on to say that the court is well aware of the value of the jobs to the employees and their families. While ultimately the decision to lay off or fire an employee is an economic one, it's borne by the company, and the court is under no illusion that this decision will have no bearing on the process. But, however, that we had made a very strong showing with the permit, and that while these jobs, you know, you could earn or unearn money or gain and ungain money, that these jobs were temporary and the damage was permanent. So, therefore, he ruled with us.
Wow. Now, he also made a ruling that because all of this turns on a permit process that's managed by the Army Corps of Engineers, right?
That is correct.
And he made...
They were arbitrary.
Arbitrary and capricious. And
yes.
That is mighty... I mean, that's mighty strong language coming from a federal district judge, because when he makes a specific finding like that, that means that he sets up a much higher hurdle for the circuit court to overturn.
Absolutely. I think he does not want his... Of course, no judge wants their ruling overturned, but this brief that the findings that he gave is one of the strongest I've ever seen. And when he said that the valuable environmental resources will be lost forever if they continue to grant these permits was... It's just very strong. If I could do cartwheels, I would.
Are you a little past the cartwheeling stage, Judy?
Yes, I am. Of course, now, all day Saturday, we split wood and stacked wood, and I have a squashed finger from that, but
ow.
I still stack wood.
Oh, so you don't? You mean you don't burn coal at home, Judy?
Nope. Don't do that.
No clinkers.
No clinkers. I know there's been a lot of letters to the editor from the employees of the Callisto mine talking about their jobs, and how their job is worth more than a tree, and they kept saying, well, you environmentalists need to turn off your computers. So we have solar panels at our office now. So we have been writing to the editor, sending them in by the power of the sun. So when we write one, that's what we put. This letter is brought to you by the power of the sun.
Beautiful, beautiful. Let me ask you, the jobs thing is always what we get flogged with, Judy.
Mm-hmm.
But in this opinion, Judge Chambers did in fact rule that these were temporary jobs.
Absolutely.
Did I hear you correctly?
Absolutely. These are temporary jobs. The problem being that the industry themselves illustrated that point well in court. I was sitting in court that day. And one of the engineers was on the stand, and he said, well, we finished one valley fill that started a few months ago, 18 months ago, and now we have to start this a new valley fill. And once we get done with that, if you read the permits, the job only lasts from 3 to 5 years, and that's it, and they have to go on to another mountain to destroy another mountain. And they're running out of mountains to destroy. And these these are temporary jobs. These are not long-term jobs. These are temporary, short-term jobs. And the destruction is permanent.
Well,
that's basically what we've been saying, you know, that these jobs are illegal. If the Army Corps of Engineers had issued legal permits, if the coal industry had not applied for illegal permits and not hired these men under the pretenses that these were legal jobs, then we wouldn't have been in court.
Well, that's true. That's very true.
Yes.
Now, also, since 1980 or so, I think that was the last time I saw the numbers, in 1980 there were some 100,000 or so coal mining jobs in West Virginia?
1960s, there was
60s, okay.
Yeah, it was in the early 60s there. It started to decline there. And there was almost 100,000 coal miners there. 1950-some, there was 120,000 coal miners. And that basically was the bread and butter of the state. And since then, of course, it's declined. And with the invent of strip mining, that's caused it to decline a lot faster than what it normally
would. Can you say off, I mean, you're right, all these letters to the editor and, oh, they're going to get my job and blah, 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 blah. How many people does it take to run, how many people does it take to destroy 4,000 acres of mountain?
Well, in their permit, I believe they said to begin with they were going to have to lay off, I think they said, about 40 men. And then they made some sort of reference to the fact that the underground mine nearby uses the rock from the mountaintop removal site to contain their slurry cells, and they would have to shut down. And I thought, well, if you use the rock from the mountaintop removal mine, then what do you need a valley fill for?
Isn't that the truth?
And it's just their answers and their statements were just contradicting, you know, everything that was said. And the gentleman on the stand, you know, how much is a ton of coal? And he said, I don't know. Well, I don't know how much a ton of coal is. I can tell you how much a ton of coal is. It ranges from $45 to $75, is according if a contract's there or not. And it was just ridiculous. I had to bite my tongue in the trial, but it was just such a wonderful, wonderful ruling by this judge. He it's such a strong ruling, and
But Judy, we've seen him go up to the Fourth Circuit, which is the single most mm-hmm. conservative court in the United States.
That is absolutely true, and somehow they'll take months to find some little nitpicky thing to turn a decision on. And we're hoping this time they won't do it. But then again, we have a backup plan.
Good.
There's many more different ways that they're violating the Clean Water Act, and we can file lawsuits on those. But they're already ahead of us on that. They're trying to change the 100-foot buffer zone rule where you can't mine within 100 feet of a stream.
Right.
And so they're already trying to change that. But we do have a bill in Congress called the Clean Water Protection Act. And since the Bush administration has tried to change this buffer zone rule, it's raised awareness about what's happening. So our co-sponsors has jumped from 60 to 104.
Wow. I'm guessing none of those are members of the West Virginia Congressional Delegation?
Absolutely they're not. There are two from Virginia, one from Kentucky, and zero from West Virginia. Money can buy, Bob.
Well, that's about the truth of it. Judy, I try to tell people on this program, and you and me, we've been talking for a long, long time, but I try to explain to people that the folks who live where mountain range removal is going down have no political representation. Am I overstating the case?
You are absolutely. I think you're understating it just a hair.
Understating? Understating?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay. So that we don't have not that you don't have political representation. You have political representation that is actively opposed to you.
Absolutely. They're like I said. They're the best politicians money can buy. Especially if you're the coal industry. Basically, anything the coal industry does is okay with them. You know, it's just we are constantly disenfranchised in the coal fields. It's a third world country. You might as well say it. It definitely is. It's a coal republic, a banana republic, however you want to state that. And whatever they choose to do is fine. You can even poison little kids if you want to, and get by with it all. That's okay. That's
yeah,
cost of doing business.
Yeah, it's only business. Let's put a little bit of a face. You talk about Southern West Virginia. Let's put a little face on these communities. We're talking about places like Whitesville. We're talking about places like Madison, Danville, Logan, Williamson, Welch. What does it mean to be from there, Judy?
Well, basically, most of the people that live here are descendants of the people that settled the area. I know my family's been here for 10 generations. My granddaddy helped hand dig these roads that we're driving on, and we've used and lived in harmony with these mountains and what the mountains produce for generations and eons, actually. And we've managed the forest, and it's a give and take process of living with the forest and living with your surroundings. But when the country came into West Virginia, our fate was sealed. Basically, they saw the richness of the coal and the timber and the natural gas, and they stole the land from the people and literally made us indentured servants and indentured slaves. And so my granddaddy, you know, got paid in fake money, got paid in scrip.
Got paid in scrip, sure.
Got paid in scrip.
Which is and I guess for some people listening to this program, that may be a funny word, but that's literally the phony baloney money that the coal companies used to pay their workers and wouldn't let them shop for the necessities of life outside their own company stores.
Absolutely. They had their own company doctors, which I understand Massey has their own clinic in Madison in Boone County. So we're going back full circle now.
When we talk about these small communities, you know, again, some of this may be hard for folks outside West Virginia to fathom, but you drive around and you see stickers on cars that say Friends of Coal and Coal Keeps the Lights On. This is or has been, you know, in those days when you were talking about 125,000 people in the economy directly working for coal, this has been a coal-based economy. But that is not the case anymore, is it, Judy?
Well, no, absolutely. There are now about a little bit less than 16,000 coal miners that are working in the state of West Virginia now. I think the Walmart employees more than the coal industry does, and I know the Board of Education employs more people than the coal industry does. But in southern West Virginia, the problem still remains that it's a mono economy, and we have listened to our politicians falsely tell us they're going to diversify our economy, we're going to bring new jobs in, and we have yet to see that promise bear any fruit. It's all smoke and mirrors.
Well,
just long enough to get elected.
Let's. I mean, we know what the problems are that arise from pollution, to the poisoning of our children, to what is essentially ethnic cleansing of an entire area settled for, like you said, 10 generations, 300 years in some places and more. Where can the region go, Judy? I mean, absent coal, we've been told that, you know, coal's the only way this region can support human life. Absent the coal, what happens?
Well, basically, this land will be unlivable if the coal industry is allowed to continue the way that they're mining coal, and the sludge injections in underground old abandoned mines is leaching into our wells. The water will be unpotable. This will be a wasteland. No one will be capable of living in this area. And with the mountains flattened, and it will be a literal flood zone. But, you know, we're trying to work on a Beyond Coal conference to show people that there's another way to do things. And I think for Gorge Bridge and Fayetteville and the tourism industry is a wonderful industry that we should embrace. because we can have a clean environment with, you have to have a clean environment or you won't have any tourists. And, you know, we and clean water, that would be another, you know, the water industry would be another industry that we could invest in. And the problem is we're making southern West Virginia an unlivable place. And those that do stay in the area will have to depend upon the taxpayers, basically, to be able to live. And that's the problem. I can't get the rest of West Virginia to understand that if southern West Virginia fails, if we don't diversify southern West Virginia, that you will be footing the bill for this, for the state. If the southern part of the state is not sustainable, the whole state of West Virginia will never be sustainable. And I, you just can't get them to understand that.
Well, God knows you're trying. You know, for all this business about what coal does for West Virginia, I drive through little towns like I named, and there are boards on windows. They're ghost towns. They are. Everything but the tumbleweeds, Judy. So where's the economic miracle of coal?
Oh, that's exactly right. That's you know, coal was supposed to brought us prosperity, and I've been looking for it for the last 20 years. I can't find it nowhere, Bob. And that's the problem.
Now, you can find the downside. You can talk to plenty of fellas who gave 30 years to the mines and can't stand up without hollering in pain from their ruined backs. You can find plenty of people that can't breathe right anymore. You can find lots of people that have been trapped in slate falls. You can find the grieving widows of the men who have died in the hole. But it's awful hard to find the profitability.
Absolutely. We're mining more coal than we've ever mined before. We're mining record amounts of coal, and Whitesville is a ghost town. Please, if you drive through it, if you lived in Whitesville area between the 40s, 50s, 60s, and even the 70s and 80s, you would cry to drive through that town. It's just so beautiful.
These are places that had nobody outside West Virginia or outside rural America would think of them as any kind of big towns, but they had their own clothing stores, they had their own dry goods stores, they had car dealerships, and it's all gone. It is literally all gone, isn't it?
We had two movie theaters. We had several nice grocery stores. They're all gone. The only good business that is happening in, well, the only profitable business I can see is the funeral homes. We have two funeral homes.
And they do a record business, I reckon.
They do good business.
You know, the thing is, though, you know, you and I are talking on internet radio, Judy. There are no radio stations, no FCC licenses involved. There's nothing but the miracle of the internet. You know what? We can, and you know, it's not much of a wire. For a fraction of the money that the ecological and economic damage that mountaintop removal does to southern West Virginia, we could have the entire section of the state wired for sound. And I'm not talking about this radio program. I'm talking about the 21st century means of doing business.
Absolutely.
We could make viable business there, because the 21st century internet based business model does not require a lot of brick and mortar stuff. It requires people with good minds and a willingness to work hard, and that's, you know, the good minds part of this is a problem too, because as the people are driven out of southern West Virginia, there's a brain drain going on too, because there's no way for them to stay and contribute to the community, is there?
Absolutely. And I had talked to Catherine Pancake. She's the filmmaker that filmed the Black Diamonds movie, and it's just this beautiful movie of the culture and the history and the heritage and the devastation. But she had talked about that she had, you know, researched about the southern part of West Virginia, and that there is an entrepreneurship that's available, and no one has won it or applied for it from southern West Virginia in the last 8 years. That is really bad, that, and our children feel as if they have to leave because coal's the only thing. And you know, I don't blame them for not wanting to go underground. That's a very dangerous job, but it's just as dangerous to be a surface miner too, as well. people die on surface mines all the time, and plus you put the entire community in danger. But it's a very sad state for our children, and we've done a poor job of protecting their future, any type of future for our kids, and it just makes me sad to think about what all we've lost and what all we've given away that should be our children's inheritance.
You know, you mentioned something about the letters to the editor that you're seeing, and I really do, Judy, I appreciate the time you've given us this evening. You mentioned something about the letters to the editor that you see in the, you know, the Beckley Register Herald and the Charleston Gazette, the Daily Mail, the basically the papers that reach the area, the Logan Banner, that kind of thing. And they, you know, these environmental people love trees more than they love their fellow West Virginians. What about our jobs? You know, we need to make it clear, I think, that this isn't about loving trees. While this is about loving our fellow man. This is about loving our children, loving the generations that will come after us, and not leaving them a poisoned desert in which they cannot live. Is that something you guys are focusing on or trying to get the word out on, to try to reverse the stereotypes that have been generated about people who actually care about the place where they live?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we answered those letters to the editor, and those letters to the editor were directed directly at the judge trying to change his mind because they were to the Huntington newspaper because that's where the trial was held. And we answered them, you know, this is not about saving a tree, even though God made those trees to clean our air and feed his creation. This is about not poisoning your neighbor and not blowing up, bombing your neighbor's home and destroying your children's future. It's about not poisoning your own children. That's what it's about. So we, you know, we have to continue to remind them that their job that they're getting paid for is to poison their own neighbors and really their own children. And we're working with a lot of college students, more and more activism on colleges every day. As a matter of fact, the first weekend in November, there is an event called Power Shift, and it's put together by student groups from all over America. And at the University of Maryland, there will be approximately 3,000 students there brainstorming about shifting the power to the youth of America and for them to take back their earth, for them to actually have a livable earth and energy, because they deserve both. And the problem is they're beginning to realize that we parents and grandparents have failed them, that we have been selling their feet to buy ourselves fancy shoes. We've been spending their inheritance. And they're beginning to realize what we've done, and the party's over. And somebody has to pay the band and clean the mess up, and they're beginning to realize they're the ones that's going to have to pay for the band and the mess up. And they want to change. And I'm just so amazed at these students. You know,
there are also programs where young folks come in and help out and learn a little bit more at Coal River Mountain Watch too, aren't there?
Oh, absolutely. This weekend we have a student summit at Coal River Mountain Watch. We've capped it at 80 students, and what we do, we bring them into the Coal River Valley, and we'll take them on Cape Ford Mountain. We'll take them into the community, and they can literally see the process of coal. Actually, you can go to Cape Ford Mountain and see a mountain being blown away, and then you can see the reclamation, the so-called reclamation. And so then every weekend now, since college has started back, we have students that come in here to learn about coal, to learn about, you know, that switch that they flip on and off is literally a weapon of mass destruction. Because every time you flip that switch on, you're blowing up someone's home, you're blowing up a mountain, you're covering up beautiful, clear mountain streams that can never be uncovered again. So they're learning about energy, where energy actually comes from, and that there's no such thing as clean coal or cheap energy. It's not cheap. Somebody has to pay for it.
Yeah, the fact that, and it's not necessarily reflected in your power bill either.
Oh, it's never reflected in your power bill. I would suspect, you know, if you wanted to pay for coal-fired electricity, you may be paying, or literally you should be paying maybe $1,000 per kilowatt all the babies that you poisoned with mercury, all the children that have asthma, all the deformities from the heavy metals that's found in the water, the men that you've poisoned their lungs with from black lung, the ones that you've killed in the mines, the roads that you've destroyed, the streams you've destroyed, and the forests you've destroyed. And so that's not ever reflected in your power bill. Never.
And a couple of other issues that I would like to touch on, this business of coal liquefaction, Judy. I read it and I feel like, I must be on a bender because nobody would actually, write this and put it out there because it can't be real. But it is, isn't it?
Yes. And what this is coal's last chance. It's their last chance to sell something, that snake oil. We call it snake oil. And basically it takes five times as much water to make five barrels of water to make one barrel of coal to liquid. It puts double the greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. The global warming causes gases than just burning regular coal causes. It's a bad idea all the way around.
And what happens to those five barrels of water? What happens to them after they've been through the process? I'm guessing nobody's going to be drinking it, right?
Well, if you want to drink it, they'll let you drink it. You know, what they're saying is, oh, we were taking all the nasty stuff out of it. Oh, really? Well, being that I'm a pretty, I got a little bit of common sense, I wonder where you're putting all that nasty stuff at. Nobody's asking that question, and that's the problem. I had.
Maybe they can inject it into an old underground coal mine.
Absolutely, and that's what they'll do. And then it'll end up into the surface water anyway.
But our senatorial delegation, our congressional delegation is on board as not only wanting to see this happen, but wanting to compel the Air Force to fly its jets on this garbage.
Well, you know what that's about, don't you, Bob? It's about funding. Who's going to fund this? You see, that was my question. I was asked by NPR, what's the worst thing about this? I said, well, the worst thing about this is that if this is so good as the coal industry is trying to sell this snake oil to us, then why aren't they funding their own project? How come they want me and you and all the taxpayers to pay for it? That's why they're trying to push it on the Air Force. They want someone else to pay for it. And if you're a business person, then you have to scratch your head and wonder why they're not investing their own money in it. I bet you can guess why.
Well, for starters, they're welfare queens.
Uh-huh.
And that brings up another point entirely. We talked about the true cost of coal. You take an organization like Massey Energy; these guys can't. They're operating on what must be one of the single most awful business models in the history of American business. These guys can't make a profit, and yet at the same time, they're expending prodigious amounts of capital to blow these mountains up. Pardon me, but you were talking about having a little bit of common sense. There's got to be a little phony baloney going on here somewhere. I know Massey had a contract with TVA that just about saved them from falling apart at one point. From a financial basis, do you guys know how they're getting away with this?
Well, it's hard to connect all the dots because there's so many dots to connect, but it all goes back to campaign contributions to the politician giving a tax break to the corporations giving it right back to politicians giving it right back to the corporations. It's a vicious circle. But the coal to liquid scam is even bigger than what people think there, and it's Jeff Goodell's book, Big Coal, and the Dirty Secret Behind America's Energy Future, kind of puts it in a nutshell. And simply put, what the coal industry is planning on doing, they want to hurry up and get all these new coal-fired power plants built and these coal-to-liquid plants built with taxpayer money, with government money, which is our money. And once they do, a few years down the road, of course, we'll be able to prove, which we already know, that it's dirty. We can't admit any more CO2 into the air. We have to stop using it. But guess what? Guess who gets the shaft? We do, because we already footed the bill to build all these plants. And now they get shut down, and who comes out ahead? The coal industry comes out ahead. And see, that's what it's all about. It's about scamming the taxpayer.
If you ran a game like this in Vegas, you'd get shut down.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what it's about. And what we're finding out in the coal to liquids is the fact that it takes more energy to make the fuel than it produces. So it's more energy intensive. It's like, it, you know, to dig the coal, the machines that dig the coal use diesel. And they use diesel to transport the coal. They use energy to prepare the coal. And then they use energy again for the process to make it coal to liquid. So we figured out, and scientists have figured out, that it takes more energy to make the coal to liquids than you get from the coal to liquids. So it's a vicious circle. It's like my grandma would call it chasing your own tail.
Indeed, indeed.
And that's what it is. And so that's basically what's going on. And it's just purely snake oil is all it is. I would rather have snake oil.
And, of course, the mountaintop removal industry has done such a lovely job reclaiming its sites, you know, the multi-billion gallon sludge lakes and filth injected into empty coal mines and things like that. We just know they're going to do every bit as good a job with the environmental aspects of coal liquefaction, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. We just know they're going to do a really fine job with that. We're figuring that, you know, again, it'll end up in our water supply again. We're finding more and more communities that are suffering from the underground sludge injection. And what we're finding now is the preparation plants that use these chemicals and they mix it with the heavy metals that comes from coal already is a toxic brew. And the men that work at these preparation plants are all becoming very, very ill. And there have been several lawsuits that have been filed, and it just makes me look at these men. They can't walk. They can't talk. And then I think about the kids at Marsh Fork Elementary School.
No, I was going to ask you about Marsh Fork.
Yeah, that coal dust is coming right across the river right there, less than 300 yards away. And those kids are playing out in that every day.
And it's been found in the school too,
yes,
right?
Yes, it's been found. Well, and it's the coal dust you can't see is what does the most damage.
Sure. I mean, it's not like you walk into the school and the sweet little school children's desk is just begrimed in black. It's just in the air for them to breathe.
Right. And, you know, it gets on the playground when you go out and play. You kick it up, you know, and then they're blasting above the kids there. And the silica dust, you know, comes down, settles on the trees and settles in the grass playing out there. And they're little lungs. They expand more than our lungs do. But these men that work in these preparation plants, and I was told that a doctor has already connected the dots, but the government is trying to keep his study secret. He's already connected the dots, and they said if he could ever get his study in the right hands, that they would shut down every coal preparation plant in this country. That's how toxic it is, Bob. That's how bad it is.
But it's good business.
But it's good business.
And
they're hiding it all.
And of course, you know, with the companies, I have some little experience in seeing what a coal company, Judy, will spend $20,000 on lawyer bills to keep one pill from being dispensed. One pill.
Absolutely.
So you can imagine what they're doing to these people, these men mostly, who work in these preparation plants. They get treated like worse than bank mules.
Yeah. The funniest thing is, you know, someone asked me once, well, they're continuously asking, is why don't these teachers speak out? Well, a lot of them have family members that work for Massey. And then again, a lot of them are afraid they'll close the school down and they won't have a job. Never mind that they're poisoning all those kids. You know, never mind that they're getting poisoned too. You know, it's all about making a living. And one of the coal miners they're not really coal miners, they're heavy equipment operators, at the trial had a T-shirt on that says, "Daddy needs his job." And I thought, and new tanning bed too, huh? That's what it's about. It's about materialistic things, you know. It's okay to poison your kids so mommy can have a tanning bed and daddy can have a new eight-cylinder truck, a Ford F-350, whatever. And they're just not thinking about, or they don't want to think about, you know, how they're getting that money. It's a shame. I do realize that they're put in a position to where that this is the only game in town. But I don't think, Bob, that they're so stupid that they can't figure out exactly what's driving this. At least I hope they're not.
Is this the kind of situation? I'm watching the chat room, and somebody just noted that this is the kind of situation that until there's a disaster like happened in Aberfan, Wales, that coal sludge disaster that buried a school and children in it, that nobody's going to pay any attention. Is that what we're dealing with here?
That is what we're dealing with. There's an old saying in the coal fields here that every law ever written about coal mining was written in blood, and it was written in our blood. And it has to be written in blood. And it still doesn't change.
I mean, obviously, if that was the case, there's no sense in you guys doing what you're doing. You're trying to keep that from happening. Are you satisfied with the progress that is being made by groups like Coal River Mountain Watch? Or if you had a wish list, how would you make it better?
Well, I know that groups like ours, Coal River Mountain Watch, OVEC, Earth Justice, Rainforest Action Network, of course, in a new group, they're working to defund coal. They're actually going after the banks that are bankrolling Massey and Arch and Peabody. But we're working as hard as we can work, Bob. We, you know, environmentalists don't get paid a whole lot of money, and the reward is in doing the right thing, you know, knowing that you're doing it for the right reasons, doing it for your children's future. But we're working as hard as we can work, and every time there's a big Powerball jackpot there, I pray that some real environmentalist somewhere will win that money, so that we could put some commercials on TV. Mainstream, you know, TV is, there's so many people caught up in watching TV, and a lot of people, you know, switching to the internet, and we're getting, you know, I think we're making a difference on the internet. I think that's making a big difference on YouTube and things like that. But yeah, if we could get into the mainstream media there, I think we could make it a quicker difference.
And that is to be. I mean, you're as realistic or more so than I am. That's where we're getting our butts whipped.
Absolutely.
I've told people, and I've had a couple of emails, Judy, about these ads that Walker Machinery, who is a primary supplier of equipment to the mountain range removal industry, has been running on the radio here in West Virginia. I don't know if they're still running because I haven't been out with the radio on lately. But it puts itself forward as fact and as reality, and it's a voice saying, "Hello, Energy Hotline," and it's some little old lady on the other end saying, "Why can't my lights go on? My lights won't turn on. Why ain't I got no electricity?"
I heard that.
That is so
demeaning and so so awful. It's the scare tactics.
Well, it's also a fraud.
Yeah,
it's also a civil fraud, I think. Because they never say that it's a dramatization. They never say that it's not based on actual events, because the lady then goes on to speak in the present tense and say, "Well, ma'am, environmentalists are trying to use the courts to make sure that you don't have any electricity."
Yeah.
Well, you know, we got potential electricity in Greenbrier County that would be based on more or less environmentally neutral windmills, but the coal industry's busting its hump to make sure that doesn't go through, isn't it?
Absolutely, and that's exactly what's happening here. People from out of state look at us like they're in the Twilight Zone when they figure out that our politicians are willing to accept mountaintop removal, but they don't want wind turbines. Well, what's wrong with that picture? And that is so ridiculous. It really makes me angry for those people to call themselves environmentalists.
Well, I get the idea. I get the idea that if somebody wanted to put some windmills up in the Coal River Valley, you guys would help make the roads, wouldn't you?
Well, absolutely. Now, we have had a wind study. See, Massey wants to blow up Coal River Mountain. It's the last mountain range between Marsh Fork and Clear Fork districts here. And there's about 6,000 acres of beautiful, beautiful, beautiful forest there, and the mountain is just gorgeous, and they want to blow it up. So we commissioned a wind study, and it's perfect. It's perfect for the... And so we presented this idea to the absentee so-called landowner and said, why not, you know, have 200 or 400 construction jobs and then 50 permanent jobs forever, and this would provide, you know, electricity for everyone here. And they didn't want to do that. They wanted to go ahead and blow the tops off the mountains. So we actually tried. We're trying to get the landowners to put a wind farm up on Coal River Mountain.
So you're sort of taking the wind out of the sails on the argument that, because, you know, I've heard it, you've heard it. Yeah. Oh, they just want to complain. They want everybody to live in the dark.
Right.
No.
No. Yeah, we think we deserve clean air, clean water, and energy. And we know it's possible. We know that's possible. It's just like sooner or later we might as well face the fact we're going to have to turn to electric cars. Electric cars that's generated by the sun. And the sun is a source of energy that even the Romans used it. That is the future for us, and need to realize that and move on with it. And the problem is that change is hard for people to look at, and they're going to have to look at that if they want to look their children in the face, because their children are surely going to know, Bob, what happened. Never that. These parents and the grandparents had better realize that here they already are finding out about it, and pretty soon our children are going to look at their parents and grandparents and say, what the hell were you thinking? Why did you do that? Why did you use up all the energy and make a mess for me to clean up? And they are going to have to answer that question. They're going to have to face their children one day and answer that question. We should have already moved to wind and solar and to biofuels, and our children know that, Bob. They know that now. They're beginning to realize that, and that's the only thing that's going to save our children, is for them to realize they have to take charge of America right now. That's why they want a power shift. And I think we as parents and grandparents had better start apologizing to our kids, and like you and I have already started that transition. We are already fighting for our children's future, for their health, and for their livable earth, because I think they can't deny global warming anymore.
Well, what about people who in West Virginia, Judy, who want to live in the future and get off the coal-fired grid? Is it possible to, is it possible to do that?
Kind of hard. The state's making it really hard. I know in Kentucky they have a program to where you can at least apply for a grant to get a solar water heater, and that eats up the biggest part of your electric bill too, that and your refrigerator. And that's the problem. If we could give subsidies to the wind and solar industry as much as we give to the coal industry, the renewable energy would not be nearly as expensive as coal energy is, and they're going to see a rise in their electric bill this year. I don't know if they realize that or not, but they're going to, because the price of coal keeps going up and up and up, and the problem there is a depleting source. Coal is a finite resource, so the price of coal will keep going up as renewable energy keeps going down, to where you're going to have a choice of either or, price-wise. The true cost, of course, is coal is toxic. But it's hard. The government makes it very hard for anyone to get renewable energy and get off the grid. I would love to have solar panels on my house, and I want real energy independence. I don't want to have to pay the man no more.
Can I just so sympathize and commiserate with that, because I've done, you know, it takes, we're probably a pretty energy intensive place here, because it takes several computers and a whole lot of electrical equipment to make this whole thing go. And I have I've done a research on a couple of occasions, and it seems to me like, at least where I am, Judy, we are locked down tight. I mean, we can't buy green energy. We can't buy credits. I mean, nothing here.
I've tried to buy credits too, and you can't do it. Now, Coal River Mountain Watch buys credits, because we're buying it from an out-of-state place, but at least we're buying it. But I've asked AEP. I've called them and asked green credits. You know, why can't I buy green? I'm willing to pay more a month. You know, and they don't want you to. They want to. my friend Patty says they treat us like mushrooms. They keep us in the dark and feed us crap.
Yep.
And that's exactly what they're doing.
Well, and I don't know. They kind of remind me of the pusher outside the schoolyard. Oh, no, kid. No, this is what you're going to use.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, we had the study a couple of years ago that said 70% of West Virginians disagree with mountaintop removal.
Absolutely. Yeah, and all these commercials they're putting on, they're, you know, trying to change, you know, public opinion, but they're so far behind. I just wish we had the money for commercials. We'd have done beat this problem within 6 months, Bob. If we had the money for commercials the way they do, we'd already beat them. Believe me. But
I do agree. And you mentioned the lottery a little bit ago. I just want you to know that I go every Wednesday and Saturday afternoon, and I get my little number.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I figure if West Virginia can give rise to a Jack Whitaker, that the sort of karmic justice says that the other side gets a chance too.
That's what I'm thinking too. That's exactly what I'm thinking. There has to be some karma there somewhere.
But by the same token, Judy, to be fair, it is not like the money's not out there. It's connecting to the. It's a lot of this is a matter of connecting to the right people too. And, generous grants and things like that help support Coal River Mountain Watch's mission. But it's also the generosity of folks who know what a rotten circumstance it is and give of their own. There's the ongoing effort to raise the money to build a new school for Marsh Fork. But even if you get all the money, getting the government to agree to build one is another part of the problem. So it's you're right. It's almost a circular problem because you can't change hearts and minds until you can reach the hearts and minds, and you can't reach the hearts and minds until you've changed enough hearts and minds to get the support.
Absolutely, and that is very true, Bob. I heard you talking about the Democrats, where you're going to. Call them out on the, cross the line too. And I thank you so much for saying that, because the Democrats can't take for granted that just because they're not, George Bush, that they're going to get a free pass. The Democrats had better step up to the plate on global warming and on environmental issues and on social issues just as much. I agree with you. Just because you're Bush doesn't mean that we're not going to say anything about you, because we are. We expect more out of you.
Well, and I think we have a right to. But more than anything else, Judy, thank you for all the time you've taken, a whole hour this evening to talk to folks about this. I could do this about every night, because I just love talking to you.
Hey, I miss talking to you too. I really, really do. I've got some road trips coming up here in the next few weeks. There, I got the Power Shift and a couple of Black Diamonds movies. It's quite a popular movie. It's won several awards. We got several new movies coming out. One called Coal Fired and another one called Just Mountaintop Removal. And Ben Morgenbach from FX did some shooting down here in the area as well. So we're looking forward to some major PR that's going to be happening soon. And, of course, you can visit ilovemountains.org, and I'll see if we can't, Coal River can't, arrange to give you a call here, every couple, two or three weeks there to give you guys an update about.
Well, that would be wonderful. And tell me where you're going on the road trip, because that's the other thing. Sometimes it's kind of hard to get hold of you because you're on the road a whole bunch.
Yes, that's very hard for a West Virginian. Believe me, that's the ultimate sacrifice, is leaving West Virginia. There's an old joke about that, but anyway, that's a big sacrifice of mine is leaving. I'd rather be sitting out in my backyard, watching the birds and the squirrels and the dogs and pulling my Tommy Toe tomatoes off, but got to get out on the road. Going to the Wheeling Jesuit College to do, there's a peace festival there, and what they're going to do is examine the comparisons of the war in Iraq for resources and the war in Appalachia for resources, because there is a similarity there. And so we're going there to settle on a panel and do some tabling. Going to D.C., going to Baltimore, going to New Jersey for a photo show. I've got a lecture in at West Virginia University. I can't think of the other place. There's so many of them right there in a row. And then Baltimore at the end of November, and we got some colleges coming in that we're taking on tour on Cape Horn Mountain. So we're the college students are really keeping us busy, and I'm glad. I'm very glad because, you know, no movement has ever succeeded without the youth involvement. And if there's young kids out there listening, please get involved in your own future. Please take back your future or you won't have a future.
So very well said and so truly said. Judy Bonds, thank you very, very kindly, and I hope we'll talk again soon. In the meantime, travel safely and hang in there, because I know how hard you work. I know how the others in the organization, how hard they work. I know sometimes it feels like thankless business, but I want you to know that there are thousands and thousands and thousands of people out there as we speak who maybe, just maybe, because of this hour that we've spent, for the first time have gotten a real good handle on what it means when I talk about or somebody else talks about the real cost of coal and the real face of mountaintop removal. So, you know, you're out there with the white hat on and you're doing the work of the angels, and we appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Bob. Wanted to tell you that the young lady that testified for her community over in the Bob White area now has two armed guards guarding her house because she has received threats.
Oh, my God. Are we talking about somebody I know?
Yes.
Oh, God.
You've met her. She's
it's not like they haven't done enough to her already.
Yeah, you know, they've poisoned her water. See, they flooded her out. They blasted her house. And because she dared to stand up, and see, that's how the coal industry works. Instead of doing their dirty work, they use scare tactics in, you know, the mono economy and, you know, scared young people to do their dirty work. So, just, you know, prayers go out for her tonight and,
yeah.
You know, hope that these people realize who the real bad guys are, which is the coal industry, and the politicians that allow them to do this. We can never forget that the politicians are allowing this to happen.
And, you know, that's probably a three-hour show all by itself, Judy, is the absolute necessity. And not just here. I mean, there are environmental disasters taking place in other parts of the country as well. It's just, you know, this is the stuff that you live with, and how important it is that we begin to grow and train and empower our own politicians.
Absolutely. Listen, Bob, send me an email when I get back from a couple of trips and give me another call, and I'll tell you what all happened at the Peace Festival and at Power Shift. That ought to be a really amazing 3 days there at Power Shift. Al Gore's supposed to be there.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And so that ought to be a really amazing, amazing conference there with 3,000 students from all over America and becoming activists and Power Shift. I hope they do take the power over because, truly, if a change can it's these young kids that whose future depends upon it that will make that change.
I agree. Yeah. Please keep us updated. And at the website, can folks find out where the road show is going, that kind of thing?
I don't think we've got it up there yet. They can probably find out about Power Shift, and we really do need to update it. The last we put up there was about Chambers' decision, and of course we got the stream buffer zone. We're trying to get comments in, you know, to the Office of Surface Mining, and if you're out there listening, oh, we would love to get 500, 600, 700,000 comments into OSM saying, you know, pull the rule and enforce the law. And you know, don't do this. So, you know, if you go to our website and go to ilovemountains.org, you can stay updated about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And take a virtual flyover. You can literally take a flyover of the coal field.
And that's a life changing experience in its own right, either on a computer screen or in an airplane.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I hope folks will update themselves and inform themselves. And maybe get some comments in on the buffer zone rule change, and you know, maybe just maybe win another fight. Let's keep adding notches to the handle, Judy.
Absolutely, let's do that. You know what? you know, I want to leave your listeners with a little joke from Boone County.
Okay. Okay.
you know Patty Seebach there.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. She has these wise old sayings. She told me, I tell everybody this, you know, in Boone County, West Virginia, a shovel is a purpose tool, Bob. You know, you can use it to kill somebody with and bury him with it, too, at the same time. It's a multi-purpose tool. It's an inside joke here.
I get it. Thanks, Judy. You have a wonderful week.
Definitely will. And Bob, you keep up the good work, buddy. We appreciate you.
We love you to pieces. Take care.
All right.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Judy Bonds, Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, ilovemountains.org. Inform yourself. Judy's just amazing. I don't know if you know what the Emma Goldman Prize is, but Judy won that. One person in the world wins it when they give it away. It's sort of like a really progressive Nobel Prize in many ways. Judy won that, okay? Because she got tired of watching her own people be made war on and decided to start fighting back. All these organizations, peaceful, nonviolent, committed to the principles of nonviolence, and yet the other side calls them every name under the book, under the sun, in the book, whatever. I'm losing my metaphors. It is inspiring to see how much can get done by people who are committed to getting it done when they understand the gravity of the fight. I could do 3 hours a night on mountaintop removal alone and never do it justice. If you can go to the website, inform yourself about the buffer zone change, register some comments with the Office of Surface Mining, tell them that it's unacceptable for you, it's unacceptable for the future, it's unacceptable for little bitty babies in the womb, it's unacceptable for babies yet undreamt of, it is unacceptable on the earth. If you can do that, you would be greatly, greatly, greatly appreciated. So we'll take a little late break for the news and come back to your phone calls, which I invite you to do. I've got a couple of blinking lights here. I don't know if they're busy signals at this point after our conversation with Judy. But I hope that anything else that's on your mind. I mean, there's other stories out there this evening. But you know, we had the little victory in the U.S. District Court. I think the information came down late on Friday, a week ago, and we hadn't had a chance to get to it yet. And I wanted to make sure that we did because we need a little inspiration here once in a while. Moral victories are not nearly as good as the actual ones. And we got one. Well, that's the thing, though. We've had a lot of them. It's just the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals keeps screwing us over. You know what I mean? So we'll be back after the news. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or on your nickel if you want to save us a little bit, 304-658-5453. We'll be right back after the news. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice, America's listener-supported Liberal Voice, The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Whatever certainty you know, forget your heroes. You don't really need those last few lessons. Stand in the open. Next voice you hear will be your own. But all right, they knew how they could hurt you.
This is the Quality News Network. Three Americans won the Nobel Prize for Economics. Professors Leonid Hurwitz, Eric Maskin, and Roger Meyerson all get the prize for development of a theory of how to maximize profit from a single sales transaction. President Bush is chiding Congress over a lack of a federal budget. A decision on 12 spending bills that keep the federal government running is holding up the pace. The budget year began on the first of the month. Turkey wants permission to launch attacks on Kurdish separatists in northern Iraq, one of the most peaceful regions in the country. Experts say Kurd rebel bases are located near large crude oil pipelines, and the threat of an attack sent oil prices to record highs today. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice met today with Palestinian leaders at the start of a four-day Middle Eastern trip, saying the time has come to establish a Palestinian state. In Iraq, it was a violent ending to the holy month of Ramadan. Deadly attacks over the last 3 days, blamed mostly on al-Qaeda, led to at least 57 deaths. Another 58 people were wounded. Also this weekend, a prominent Iraqi journalist was assassinated, a correspondent for the Washington Post. In addition, two U.S. soldiers were killed in separate incidences in that country. Also in Baghdad today, a lieutenant colonel accused of aiding the enemy is standing court-martial, facing life imprisonment if convicted. He was in charge of the detention facility in which Saddam Hussein and thousands of other men, women, and children were detained. Russian President Vladimir Putin will now delay his visit to Iran amid reports that he is a target for assassination in that country. He could visit Tehran later this week, but no formal plans are yet available. Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, meantime, says unless Iran attacks the U.S., President Bush must receive congressional approval before taking military action against Tehran. In Beijing, the Communist Party Congress, held once every 5 years, began this morning with an address by China's president. Governmental procedure reform and a more measured pattern of growth are on the agenda. In the second terrorist attack in northern India within 1 week, a bomb exploded in a movie theater, killing at least six and wounding another 30. In Madrid, trial began today for more than two dozen suspected terrorists who allegedly planned to bomb the very courthouse in which they're being tried. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll look at science and business news up next.
You know you can depend on QNN for honest news. Now we want you to know about an honest source of information on one of the country's most desirable vacation destinations, Carmel by the Sea on California's beautiful Central Coast. That source is the best address in Carmel, carmel.com. Just a few simple clicks and you're visiting a website that mirrors all that Carmel stands for: quality, character, tradition, beauty, the great outdoors by the sea, cultural heritage, and the best shopping, charming inns, superb dining, world-class art, music, and theater, a cornucopia of delights. So when you're planning your next getaway, go to the best address in Carmel, carmel.com, for tips on everything Carmel. Then put that information to good use by visiting Carmel by the Sea for an unforgettable getaway, carmel.com.
One of the most ancient fossil discoveries of its kind has been found in southwestern Japan, the skull of an 85-million-year-old hadrosaurid. Montana researchers say they've found a 2.5-foot-long footprint of a Tyrannosaurus rex, most likely at least 65 million years old. The print was discovered in a region rich in dinosaur fossils, the rocky Hell Creek Formation. Well, the nation's three largest banks will team up to buy tens of millions of dollars in investments. Experts say the move could promote investor appetite for short-term borrowing needs. Airbus has finally delivered its first finished A380 Super Jumbo to Singapore Airlines. The delivery is 18 expensive months late. The first Singapore flight of the world's largest passenger plane with 800 seats. That'll take place next week. For the first time in four quarters, South Korean technology company Samsung announced a profit, albeit a modest 1%. The company earned $2.4 billion on the strength of its sales of flat-screen TVs and mobile phones. Light sweet crude oil trading at $86.13 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Gold trading at $762.20 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped 108 points to end at 13,984. NASDAQ down 25, S&P 500 down 13. More on our website at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Alrighty then. Got about 3/4 of an hour left in tonight's program. 40 minutes, yeah, give or take. You want to get involved, jump in. Conversation's fine. And a program note for you. The world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio host was stuck today dealing with a networking nightmare. And Peter Godbold will, as a result, not be live this evening. I imagine Peter Godbold is sound asleep right now, as a matter of fact. I know the kind of hours this guy keeps, and they're just nuts. They're crazy. So we'll have a repeat-er for you. I'll be here all week. Try the veal. Don't forget to tip your waitress. But right now, however, we will go straight to the phones, and you know the phone number, of course, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, for those of you who like to spell on your telephone keypads, or the direct dial is 304-658-5453, and we will go to that phone right now, and Kevin joins us from Washington, D.C. Hey, Kevin, how's it going?
Hi, great, great. You know, I agree with the previous caller 100%. I just want to start off with that. The question I have, what is it with the right wing that they're willing to people that are so bad for them? And, you know, this is nothing new. This is similar to, like, when they used to have protest riots in Wall Street. It wasn't the investment bankers that attacked the hippies. It was the hard hats.
Yeah.
The ones who were going off to Vietnam.
And you'd have to spend some time in southern West Virginia to really see it, Kevin. There are elements down there of real civil strife. I don't mean people, you know, no guns in the streets or anything yet. But if you won't have a Fiends of Coal sign in your yard, you are suspect. And God forbid you put an I Love Mountains bumper sticker on your car, because then you're out. Then you're one of them.
And I'm like, no, this is killing you, your children, your future. You know, your income eventually, because eventually they're going to just move on, and these companies are going to import their coal from China because it's such a non-profitable enterprise, and they're probably just getting so subsidized by the government just so that there's like a proxy.
Oh, if you pulled the welfare out from under the likes of Massey Energy would be gone in a week.
Yeah. And that's what it's all about. You know, it's all part of the big carbon producing centralized power grid kind of situation, which they have to be getting their money. They're not getting their money from the sale of coal. They're getting it from either the electrical companies who are buying their coal, or from, you know, somewhere from the Department of Energy. You know, they're definitely, you know, they're so subsidized, and that's the thing. They're so
well. Look, let me tell you a little story, Kevin, if I may, please, just to give you an idea of
sure.
How things work around here. A couple of years ago, we had the novel political idea of doing something, of doing very gently and very lightly and almost unnoticeably. An increase on what's called the severance tax on coal. Now, the severance tax on coal is a tax that is paid per ton of coal removed from the earth. Okay? It is severed from the earth, and it is therefore taxed. And the rate is something ridiculous. I mean, it's pennies on the ton, okay? And we raised that rate, and the coal companies hollered and squealed like the first hog cut in the fall. And before we even knew it, and I was one of the only people that, maybe the only guy who was on the radio at the time who did talk about it, they snuck a little change to the law in. Okay, most places have a public service commission. Most states have a public service commission, and things like electricity rate increases, natural gas rate increases, that kind of thing, go through the Public Service Commission, right?
Yeah.
Well, what happened is the legislature snuck a little piece of legislation through that went along with the coal severance tax increase.
Yeah.
That allowed that allowed the power company, not the coal companies, but the power company, to turn around and increase electricity rates in West Virginia without having to go to the Public Service Commission.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the way we get treated here. I mean, the ordinary consumer, the ordinary citizen, I don't think there's any such thing as an ordinary citizen, extraordinary citizen. You know, the Bush family, if they had to go out and do to make a living what most Americans have to do, they would be on their knees begging for welfare in a day, okay? But extraordinary, your workaday West Virginians never had any idea this was being done to them. And at the same time, the coal companies were hollering that they were getting stuck. I mean, if you were doing that in the subway in New York City, you'd get hauled away for running something slipperier than three-card Monte.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, that's just the way it is. Especially, and, you know, it's like that ignorant 20% working class. They have no money. They're never going to get any money. It's like when I was out west, you know, because I often talk to you about my adventures out in the Midwest.
In the wild Midwest.
Yeah, you know, I said something about Ford Motor Company, that Henry Ford was a Nazi sympathizer. One guy got on me like
how dare you?
Yeah, you know, saying how his father Ford, his grandfather worked for Ford. And I asked him a question, are you working for Ford? And he said, no. I said, you don't owe a thing to Ford. You know, because Ford done pulled out.
Yeah.
You know, pulled out years ago. You know, but he talked about that. And I'm like, it's like this blind loyalty. It's almost like a cult-like thing. I said, Henry Ford was a Nazi.
Yes, he was. I mean, a real one. I mean, not, you know, not the Godwin principle, oh, somebody's a Nazi, like Republicans called are fond of calling Democrats Nazis. No, no, no. No, Henry Ford was a real, live, honest-to-God National Socialist sympathizer, Jew hater, you know, the works. He published the single most widely circulated anti-Semitic broadsheet in the country at one time.
Yeah. I don't know, man. But to me, I just think the right wing is very masochistic at this point. You know, the worse you treat them, and, you know, I've always said there is a element of self-hatred in the right wing, but I didn't know it was this bad. You know, I really didn't. And it's like, to hear her say now, she's been one of the people who warned those who are active in the movement have had her wells poisoned and her.
Oh, that, no, they've done that to thousands of people around here. I mean, this is just what was done to her, Kevin, as a function of mountain range removal. Her land was flooded, her house was blasted, the foundation was destroyed, her water well was dried up, or what water in it became toxic, and she dared to go and testify under oath against. These valley fill permits, and now she has to have an armed guard because the mountain range removers, these guys, they're trying to take our jobs away, would kill her in a heartbeat.
And the thing is, okay, you know, as you know, I go out to West Virginia every now and then.
Yeah.
And I've been out to, you know, I haven't gone deep into West Virginia. I'm only in, like, Berkeley County,
mm-hmm.
First county. And I could tell you, I've driven by the future of the ones that are going to happen in South Virginia, and all they're going to do is, you know, once they get what they need to get, it's going to be abandoned and just be a pile of mud in the middle of nowhere. And they're going to
and the mud will be poison, Kevin. The mud will be poison.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I this means so much to me, and it's. And I fear that, you know, the limitation of this medium is that I can't send a picture, so I just have to send people to ilovemountains.org and crmw.net. Yeah, when you see it, does it? I mean, what is it?
An atomic bomb exploded.
Yeah, the first time you saw a mountain range removal picture, what went through your mind, Kevin?
I thought, what happened here? And, you know, listening to your show, I said, oh, I know. But it literally the surface of a moon or another planet.
Yeah, no, nothing can live there. And guess what? The difference between the photos you saw and reclamation are negligible.
It's like, you know, it's like I remember seeing video footage of after when Mount St. Helens went up.
Yeah.
And it looks just like that. And, you know, this is the future. Once, you know, and how much longer they're holding on to a future that's not going to exist for, that won't be existing in another 5 or 10 years.
No, well, the statistics indicate that at present rates, and if the coal business gets their way, they'll increase the rates at which they destroy the mountains by 2010, okay, which is 3.5 years away, 2.5 years away, 2.5 years away. By 2010, there will be an area of West Virginia and Appalachia in general that has been forever destroyed that will equal the size of Delaware. Now, Delaware's not, you know, it's not the biggest state in the Union, but it's an entire state's worth of land destroyed.
Gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, there's the long-range stuff. All these little streams that they talk about, valley fills, all these valleys have a little stream running through them. Some are bigger than others. But when they get buried, they're choked off forever. Well, those little streams feed the Little Kanawha River or the Pond Fork, and they go from there to the Big Coal River. The Big Coal spills into the Kanawha. The Kanawha feeds into the Ohio into the Mississippi. There is one scientist at Wheeling Jesuit University. It's Wheeling College. Wheeling College is what we have to call it now. Wheeling Jesuit. He says that in a very short period of time, there will not be any clean drinking water in the entire southern half of West Virginia.
Wow.
Any.
Yeah. You know, it reminds me of, you know, the oil industry, because, you know, the oil industry originally started off in Pennsylvania.
Sure.
And what happened was is that they used so much oil in the Northeast, Pennsylvania, Ohio, I think West Virginia, Indiana, all those states had oil at one time. It's kind of like...
Oh, no, we've got capped wells here now, Kevin.
Oh.
We've got oil wells that would be producing. We've got gas wells that would be producing.
Yeah. But, you know, they just kept on going further south. When one place was just used up, they went on to the next place and so on and so forth. And that's why until they had the so-called strategic oil reserve, which is a bunch of baloney, you know, that's why most of the oil is in Texas and Louisiana and Oklahoma. You know, it's like people really need to read their history and look and wake up. You know, companies, corporations are like pigs, which in a swill, and no matter how much you fill, that's it's never enough. It really is never enough for them. And, you know, this is why I said I'm probably never going to work for a private corporation again. Never. Because regardless of what you give them, it's never enough.
No, and it comes with ethical baggage that you apparently you just got tired of toting.
Yeah. You know, and it's like, why do you think so? There's so much backdooring your colleagues in the workplace nowadays? It's more than ever. It's more than ever now. That's why I'm getting into what I'm getting into. You know, I've had enough. You know, like Roberto Duran, no mas.
No mas, no mas.
Yeah.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
It's like, I think as long as people keep on having babies, and, you know, believe you me, I'll always have work.
Yeah. Well, Kevin, good to hear from you, my good friend.
And good to hear from you, my brother. I'll talk to you soon.
Take care now. Bye-bye. And let's see if we've got somebody here or if it's a busy signal. Hey, who have I got?
Hey, Mr. Kincaid, this is Leonard Clark. How you doing?
Leonard, how are you?
Pretty good. I'm sorry. everything. It's been so darn long. I've been hanging out with our friend Sarge down here. You might know he's down in Arizona now.
Oh yeah. I've been on the show a couple of times.
Oh, he got us fired up a couple of days ago, and we were out in front of Clear Channel, affiliate out here. It lets Rush Limbaugh go on, and we just decided to go down there and silly as it seems, let them know in front of their big monolithic building, plate glass building, that hold them to task and their major advertisers to task for running somebody on like Rush Limbaugh.
Well, you know, what was it?
Fired me up because I had got the initial idea after Media Matters had said, look up the affiliates, you know, put out through the internet, and I said, well, we'll do one thing better. We'll go down there.
Yeah.
They don't have a fence around their facility. It's right on near the public sidewalk, and so I brought Sarge along because it was kind of more of a spur of the moment. You don't plan things like that, and so Sarge said, Leonard, come on now. Let's go right up to the front of the building. So we went up there, and there's the high-powered executives coming in and out and kind of like, what the heck? And Sarge just started out yelling, we're phony soldiers. We go to war. We don't have a pimple on our rear end, you know? He was yelling loud.
Yeah, no wallflower. No shrinking violet, that Sarge.
He fired me up. He fired me up.
Well, you know, Leonard, it blows my mind because some of the stuff he says would get a license pulled from a radio station owner hosting a liberal program. He's had this running gag for years now, and Peter Godbold, who handles our lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered issues on his show, pointed out the fact that he resurrected his old add a dick to me joke. He refers to any woman who has ever had female to male transsexual sexual reassignment surgery as having had an addictomy. Now I don't know when Rush airs out in the Phoenix area. If he's airing live.
Unfortunately, he does during the day, Monday through Friday. I don't listen. Sometimes you sometimes know what they're spouting, but
well,
I just know that he airs.
Yeah, well, see if he. He needs a whole bunch of FCC complaints filed on him from a whole bunch of cities.
Interesting. You know, Mr. Kincaid, that is, I never even thought of that aspect.
For that comment, because, you see, that's obscene speech on the
sure
public
is.
Airwaves, especially during the daytime when little children could hear it.
That sure is. And, you know, a lot of the people just said, Leonard, you know, you're barking up the wrong tree. The more you protest, the stronger he gets. And I said, well, no, we're not going after that big redwood tree or the big tall tree called Rush Limbaugh that's, you know, seems like you can't cut down with an axe. We'll go after the ground underneath. We'll turn that ground into mud so that that big tree can't stand anymore and collapses. And now the thing is, if you were a little radio station, or, you know, you've got advertisers, but that just gives you more publicity unless you're stealing candy from babies. Your advertisers are generally more loyal, whether you're right-wing or left-wing or whatever it is. Now, if you are a big Fortune, I don't know if Clear Channel's Fortune 500, but if you're one of those type companies and your advertisers are Fortune 500 or up there, they have to appeal to a much wider audience than just the people that listen to Rush Limbaugh. And if they start getting uncomfortable, I mean, it's just a shot in the dark. We had Scott Ritter down here in Scottsdale, and he basically, I mean, I thought he gave a pretty astute analysis of the Iran thing, but he basically conveyed a sense of almost of hopelessness and said that, well, you know, it looks like somewhere up to June of next year, the window will come and we will go to war with Iran. There's not much we can do. Just keep doing what you're doing. But, you know, I think people need to understand, what is it? I've never been in a little britches rodeo, but I've had friends when I was a kid that tell me when you have a squealing pig, you know, you're probably not going to get it the first time. You might get lucky. The pig keeps on squealing, and you keep on grabbing and jerking and everything you can to get it by the whatever, and you'll sooner or later get it. And I think Rush Limbaugh is like a squealing pig.
Well, let's look at that for just a second, Leonard, because you talk about, you know, little station versus big station. The fine structure is not defined by the size of the market the radio station is in. For instance, Rush Limbaugh said, add a dick to me, and that went out over something bigger than 300 stations. each station is could be liable, if the FCC would act on it, each station could be liable for a fine of no less than $275,000.
Wow. Well, when did he make this statement again?
I'll have to check with Peter, but it was just last week.
Oh, wow.
It's in the last week and a half, because Peter had the audio. In fact, let me see if I've got it here. I might be able to play it so
and
you can
again,
hear it.
I need to email you, or I don't care. I give my email out to everybody that.
Yeah.
I never changed it, so if you need my email too, I can email you back, or I just looked you up on the internet again. Sarge said, "Darn it," and I'm like, I feel like a complete jerk for not calling Mr. Kincaid. And
oh well, stop with the Mister already, okay? We're just friends around here. It's just Bob. let me hear. You know, I give the
okay. The email address
is bob@headonradio.com. Just shoot me a note, and that way your email will be in my box, and you know.
Bob@headonradio.com. Headonradio.com. I will, because you know any angle we can. We're working on so many things out here, and you'd be surprised. But listening to your show is interesting. You know, you're going from Virginia, right?
There? West Virginia. West Virginia. Yeah.
West Virginia. I'm sorry. All right. See, I got to get down there. It's a sad thing. In the Army, I was in Fort Lee, Virginia, but not for very long. I trained there in AIT many, many years ago, and it's just really sad. I haven't been able to travel, and I'd sure like to get down there.
Oh, we'd love for you to come and see us before we're gone. The state of West Virginia, before they get done blowing us up.
Well, you know, I tell my friends down here on this Progressive Network, and I need to make sure they know about you, and I've heard Jeff mention yours, and Sarge mention you on this fella Jeff Ferris' show down here in Novam Radio, and I tell them the same thing. I'm like, you know, the thing is, they're concentrated areas, stations, and it would not be the unthinkable, you know, to have these people concentrate on us. I mean, you know what's going on with the special order, what was it, 51, presidential
sure.
directive, and all the rest of it. So, you know, we just have to keep our heads up and make sure that, you know, they know that we're not going to go easily into the night. I don't like violence. I believe in self-defense. I don't believe in all that. But someone attacks me or my loved ones or my family, that's called self-defense.
Sure.
You know, and that is legal, you know. But I think we can get what we want to achieve by just raising hell in mass, but it's just trying to get to the people and letting people know about shows like yours. And I'm going to start getting off my rear end, and I've been missing out because I haven't had a chance. Getting off of work a little bit earlier, I should be able to get on the internet and start listening. I've already heard a great perspective from what's going on down where you're at.
Well, I tell you what, it's awfully good to hear from you, Leonard, because we've talked before, and I know you had some technological issues and stuff, but you're welcome here at this program anytime. You, of course, are a veteran, and you were in the sand in Iraq. I had an opportunity to talk to a couple of Iraq war vets a couple of days ago, and I told them about this story that I read that's broken fairly recently about the car crash between the Blackwater vehicle and the Army Humvee. Did you see this thing, Leonard?
Unfortunately, I'm just picking up on that. I feel guilty now. I try to pick up on everything that's going on.
Well, basically what happened is there was a crash. The Blackwater guys got out, drew down on American soldiers, made them get on the ground, put their hands behind their heads, and disarmed them and kept guns at their heads.
That doesn't surprise me at all, Bob. I mean, one time inside of a place called Camp Liberty, the same thing, you know, transpired, but I got pretty angry at this. In this case, they seem to be British mercenaries, apparently working for Blackwater or one of these kind of firms, and they ordered us. You know, they had their own revolvers on their hips, saying, you know, you need to get over there and search those Iraqis, and they're ordering us around. And I'm glad I wasn't the squad leader. He was too diplomatic, but you know, I'd already heard about them doing over there, and It could have escalated quite easily.
Well, the idea of some Blackwater mercenary scum.
Exactly. We have
putting a gun to the head of one of our soldiers. No, sir.
Exactly. We have contractors that I prefer to call them mercenaries. Now, look, don't get me wrong. You know, if you go over there as an individual, you've got tons of bills, you're going bankrupt, like what I think it was a truck driver, somebody that went over there, got captured, and somehow by a miracle was released. But, you know, the people that especially that head up these outfits, like that Prince fella and these others that go and, you know, bribe off these, you know, pay these congressmen and give them all this money, that those are the people especially that I despise. I mean, we were getting ordered around. You know, when you'd stay on post, you'd feel lucky if, you know, we pretty much every day and driving our Humvees and, you know, be target practice for these people. And when you got to stay in, it was a good thing, but you would have to go report to a civilian contractor, and we were told in no uncertain terms, you do exactly what you're told by this civilian. And I just thought that was a crock of, you know what, right there. I mean, we had to go around, and if we didn't, we were reported immediately to our superiors. So we were having to take orders from these people. People don't even realize that.
Oh,
so, yeah, it's insult to injury.
Well, I told this one vet about it, and I mean, I could see the blood coming up in his face.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Oh, he was mad." And you know, this is a guy who's done two tours, getting ready to do number three.
Wow. Terrible.
Yeah, and he said, you know, he said, no way would I tolerate something like that.
It gets that close. You got the weapons, and you become like that family with your squad of men. And I'll tell you what, it's almost like a gang. It's like, it's not anymore, you know, you got the American flag on your shoulder, but, you know, it could easily, when you become so close as a family going through that, you know, if somebody messes with one of your inner family, they could easily all start firing. I wouldn't be surprised if they've covered up. I mean, I know they've had actual gun battles, but you don't hear hardly anything, you know, and that's not a surprise. So they've covered up so much. But mercenaries, as you know, the revolution, you know, I was reading Thomas Paine's book, and I can never seem to get finished with it, The Rights of Man, or one of them. It was one of his books. Anyways, on the storming still, you know, the French soldiers had finally had enough. The people did not know, the French people, if they would join in. And they had heard that a mercenary army was being sent by these kings and princes, these nobility, to take, you know, put down the revolution. And finally, the French soldiers just en masse, you know, just joined in and with the people. But I think we've got a lot, you know, as you know, we've got these mercenary companies, and you probably heard about the so-called facility in San Diego. And,
right.
And, you know, Sarge, of course, talks to me about what's going on, you know, down where he's been down there with these
No, Blackwater showed up in New Orleans and started disarming the public.
Yeah, exactly. There you go, taking away their weapons. That's your so-called, you know, conservatives saying that they're going to keep our Second Amendment right to keep it, but they're down there confiscating people's weapons.
Well, that's the Second Amendment. Where the right wingers are concerned, Leonard, that's the right of white Americans to keep and bear
exactly.
arms.
Exactly. That's sure. ironic because, you know, in Baghdad, you know, every Iraqi family, a man is allowed to have an AK-47 in his house, unless, you know, for protection.
Yeah.
So we're not even allowed to do that. I mean, they're keeping tabs on all of us. But, you know, like I found out when, believe it or not, you know, I had some people trying to email me from the press. They couldn't get through to me. They wouldn't let these people talk to me in person. But I was able to get through with email, and I had this lady from Fox, Kelly Vlahos or something like that on Fox, emailing me, and I said to myself, well, this is Fox. I mean, they're going to totally slaughter me. They're going to call me traitor. Or, you know, I said, wait a second. I thought to myself, you know, there's still human beings, believe it or not, working in these big, and, you know, working for these beasts. You know, they're in the, and who knows? So I tried to be as friendly and as I could, and lo and behold, when the story came out, they still, you know, tried to make me look bad, but I could tell in the story there was some defense for what I had done with my blog, and I'm convinced to this day that, you know, she got with the editor because they've got to go to these editors. And so what I'm trying to say is sometimes, you know, even if you're dealing with a notorious mainstream media source, if the reporter, you know, sometimes the reporters will try to do what they got to do, you know. I would like for them to say, that's it, I'm not going to work for them anymore, but they're paying bills, they got families. I'm not talking about pigs like Tucker. What's his name?
Yeah,
can't even think of his last name.
Carlson.
Bow tie.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I saw him on Mar the other night, and I was just, oh, I, you know, I just, oh, that smug little smile on his face. you know, when they brought up the 12-year-old child and oh, they shouldn't have children, you know, and all this, it was just something.
Oh, shouldn't.
But anyways,
oh, God, don't take me there, Leonard. now, a new article out from the Los Angeles Times, you might find this interesting. Given all the problems that Blackwater has been causing of late, there are some people who are beginning to ask legal questions about whether the mercenaries could be considered unlawful combatants under some of Bush's own laws.
Well, fortunately, I mean, I know a lot of friends who are independent and who, to me, it's not so much a party affiliation anymore, but are Democrats, some of them, in the Congress. As you know, they don't seem to be. There are some that are trying their best to stand up, but I'm so frustrated. I'll tell you, down here in Arizona, they've got this thing where the progressives are airing commercials on the local progressive station here, saying, send a voided check to Harry Mitchell, Congressman Harry Mitchell, and let him know, hey, we got you elected, and we know you can do good, but, you know, we elected you to end this war, and this is a voided check, you know, until you start doing what we ask. And he's been getting thousands of them. So, you know, I just talked to another friend who re-read from independent. He was running against Trent Franks, but, of course, there's another fellow named Thrasher out here in Arizona. Well, I convinced my friend to go Democrat, because I said, you know, you're helping the cause, you're helping this country, not only just because you're another candidate, but you can push this middle of the road Democrat who won't even say he's for getting out of Iraq in any time soon, or for medical health care for all children. You can push this individual, because the grassroots are so angry down here right now in Arizona. I think they're really underestimating. I really do.
Well, I hope you're right, Leonard, because I started the program off talking with another one of our hosts, Mark Levine, from the Radio Inside Scoop that goes from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern. And he was talking about my pessimism, because I'm just about all done with Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid.
Oh, yeah.
I've
had it with them. I've had it with them.
Well, you know, Mark was explaining to me, you know, that she can't do any more than she politically will be allowed to do, that she could introduce bills of impeachment, that she could have hearings, and go on and on and on, and then lose the vote in the House, and wind up looking like crap, and we'd have a Republican Congress in 2008. I don't see that. I don't see all of those dominoes falling that way. But you know,
Well, what's the alternative if we
are setting a precedent, Leonard?
God, we're going to lose again. You know what? We're already losing the country, the republic. You know, we've never been a utopia. You know, but we sure as heck have been as good as and better than most systems in the last couple hundred years. And if they don't stand up and make a stand, that's, you know, that's what people want to see. I mean, what is it, 11% rating the Congress now? So Bush is even more emboldened and more, he's saying to himself, yeah, the people hate me, but look what they think of the Congress. I think there are more chances of turning Republican if they don't stand up and do something. I mean, what was it, Nixon, ironically, who used getting out of Vietnam to help him get elected, a Republican? They need to stand up
and
say enough is enough. But
And not just that, though, Leonard. The other thing is that if we let Bush get away with what he's getting away with, what kind of a precedent do we establish for the next president who wants to get away with something? You know, because that president will look back and say, look, he suspended habeas corpus, he spied on the American people, he started illegal wars. You know, I can do that and more.
That's right. I think that's when I say nation comes before party. You know, I can see why they're saying, well, you know, we get out Bush, we put Bush out, they're going to put in a Republican and win. But you know what? Even if they won, and I don't want that. But if another Republican won the presidency, compared to the precedent that will be set, you know, by just leaving Bush in, you know, that's very true. We're on. You know, I heard it in the other progressive radio host today. I'm hearing it everywhere. They're just saying, I don't know about this protest anymore. I just don't know what I'm saying to them. Don't give up. I mean, it's corny. It sounds corny.
Oh, no, you can't give up.
Word and hopelessness is hope. And, you know, and that, what was it, one sledgehammer, a couple people came out with little hammers and started chipping on the Berlin Wall. And, you know, these neocons are like squealing pigs. I mean, you just got to keep grabbing at them and grab them by the tail, grab them by the ear, whatever you got to do, and that's the only way we're going to do it. And they know we're getting tired. We just got to get right back up, and go in the mud with them. And anyways,
No.
I got going. Sorry, I know you probably got other people.
No. That's okay. I haven't heard from you in darn nigh forever.
Oh, yeah, and it's so good to hear your voice. And it's good to know there are other people and let you know and your folks know. You know, I mean, here in Arizona, we're really, really trying to unite. But the question is now, you know, my big theory or others' theories was the 9/11 truth movement. You know, and now I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to tell you right now, it's not that I haven't got there yet on whether Bush would actually do what he did. It's not that he couldn't do it. I think Bush is one of the most evil, you know what's. And the neocons, it's not that he couldn't do it. It's just if you're going to try to get away with murder, mass murder, it's, to me, much better to let it happen. And I've been saying to my friends...
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing
today,
for me, Leonard.
...out on Air America and said, you know, this former Q West official is one of the only, basically the only main official that's sitting in jail right now who... said to the government, no, we're not going to allow you to spy on people. Our lawyers are saying Americans will get in trouble. That's illegal. And they were supposed to, this happened way before 9/11, it turns out now. His lawyers are going to testify or have that they were asked to spy on Americans and set up these illegal spying operations long before 9/11 happened. Surprise, surprise. So if he's been his big defense, Bush's defense is we have to have this because of 9/11. So I'm saying to the 9/11 truth people, I know the guy who heads it out here in Arizona, I'm like, look, what they're doing is classic smear. I mean, if you've ever seen the movie Roswell, you know, and it's classic any intelligence service in most countries, if you want to discredit somebody, you can't get if it's a huge organization of people and you can't take one of them out. You don't deny a story. Like if if an Air Force base has three little green men in Arizona, and five people are prepared to testify and swear on a Bible, that's the case. They witnessed it. What the government will do is, okay, go find five people who stole candy from babies or robbed banks, and then let them say, yes, I'm prepared to swear an affidavit. And the press will take that, the mainstream media, and say, you see, look at these people that rob banks. Look at these people that deny maybe the Holocaust. You know, I'm just saying, and I told my friends in the 9/11 truth movement, I'm trying to tell them, rather than say, look, you've seen the movie, and you see the physics of what happened, you know, how can you still believe Bush didn't do it? I think it's better to say, look, at least you will say that now with the evidence of the Q West official and others prepared to testify that they were trying to spy on America, they were spying on Americans long before with Bush, that they let it happen. That way you include a larger group rather than alienating them. And that's what the DLC Democrats are doing. That's what the neocons are doing. They are trying to discredit the whole anti-occupation, military industrial complex right now by saying, okay, look at the 9/11 truth movement. They'll take one or two people and I have friends who believe this is the case, but I know that I believe the Holocaust happened, okay? But they've taken one or two people like they did out here in Arizona. They had an avowed Holocaust denier at our main conference, and the newspaper guy came out. They didn't have any PR savvy. They kicked the reporter out who said, wait a second, you said you're not going to let the Holocaust denier be part of this big worldwide conference here in Arizona, but yet he's over there selling his something, and then their reaction was to kick the guy out, and it's like the reporter. And it's like that's the kind of thing that Bush and these neocons and the intelligence community loves. So what we need to do now.
Yeah, you take one goon and paint the entire movement with it. I understand. Yeah.
Yeah. AIM, American Indian Movement, they did it there. They made them so paranoid against each other. They had a plant. That's very common, and
well, look, yeah, and
it's going on. In my opinion,
it's been proven.
Think now we can find new strength and say, look, if you can't, and I'll be honest, like I said, I don't think I really believe, you know, that there were victims in the plane that died and all of this. But even if that's not the case, I'm not 100% sure on it anymore. With Bush, I don't know, but I know this. I believe he, at a minimum, let it happen. And if he's able to let it happen, and looking at the physics of the building coming down and the amount of time, I mean. And that is why it is, in the long run, going to help us, because people are now questioning, what about the Tuskegee experiment? What about the Kennedy assassination? Look at, what was it, the 1974 Church Report Committee or
whatever? In other words, can we please just have the doggone truth?
Exactly, and we've been told for so long it'll never happen. But you know what? I mean, it's true, the same cabal of old man Bush, and you know, when Ford had passed away at the funeral, the hairs on the back of my neck started to go up when he said, and all those people out there, those conspiracy theorists or something to the effect, old man Bush said, you know, trying to say Jerry was a part of cover-up or something of Kennedy or something. That's not true. You know, it'll never be found out what happened or something like that. And when he said that, he was telling symbolically, you know what, try as hard as you will. It will always be a mystery. We'll make sure of that. But I don't think it has to be that way. Simon, I'll probably say his name wrong, Wiesenthal, who wrote the book Night and who was one of the notorious Nazi hunters who never stopped. Or it was a few of these Nazi hunters that they would go 50, 60 years after the war was done looking for these Nazis. Well, I think we should do the same thing with these neocons. We should never let them go. We should not let them fade into history. We should not accept Pelosi or Reid saying, well, there's nothing we can do. And unfortunately, as you've probably already figured out, a lot of the people listening, you know, there's probably a lot of skeletons in their closet. You know, the old saying, don't throw rocks at my glass house because you live in one too. That's the problem when you get to know each other too well and you hang out with the same people. You know, it's like, we can also throw some rocks at your glass house. So I think that's the problem. That's one of them. So, anyways, I think I've ran it on long enough.
No, Leonard, I love your passion and I love your truth, man.
Well, that goes right back to you, sir. I appreciate it. And I'm going to let Sarge know I got to look up his number and call him, let him know I was talking with you, and I'm sure he'd say hi to you if he could right now.
Oh, I talked to him earlier today, so, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're hopefully going to get something going here. We're going to let Clear Channel know, and we're going to grow some people out here to go out there, and I think...
Well, shoot me an email, and I'll talk to you a little bit. We'll talk a little bit more about some strategies for doing that.
Because... appreciate the information on the FCC. I think that is excellent. I didn't even think about that. All right, well... All your friends that are listening out there, thank you, and I'm going to be a regular listener now. And you just keep it up and keep your head up, and we'll get our country back somehow. We'll get our republic.
As long
back.
As they keep setting them up, we'll keep knocking them down, Leonard.
Exactly. Well, you have a good evening, and all the folks all around the country, and especially there in West Virginia, beautiful people out there. I have family from that area, so.
All right. Thank you, Leonard. Take care now.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All righty. Adios.
Leonard Clark, good to hear from Leonard. Let's see who we've got here, if indeed we've got someone. A couple of minutes yet to go.
Yeah,
hey, who have I got?
Jim?
Yeah, hey, Jim, what's up?
Just a quick note here. What an excellent caller.
Oh, Leonard's great people.
The man makes a lot of sense. I really enjoyed what he had to say.
Well, good. Thank you.
Have a good evening, buddy.
You too. Take care, Jim. All right, so we're done. Wow, that one went by in a hurry. My first night broadcasting is a threat to national security. Not just every day you get to be one of those, you know. Thanks, many thanks, to our chief engineer, John Fox, to our IT professional, Peter Godbold, to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org, the hardest working man in liberal talk, truly. Millions and millions of hours of liberal talk served out. No questions asked, no bill sent from Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. I personally think that Ben is almost single-handedly responsible for helping folks figure out that there was an alternative to the right-wing hate machine. And he works so very, very hard, and we are so very grateful for everything that Ben does. And always, always... always. RMR, Gina, it's all for you. We'll be right back.
pre-1967 borders. He's calling for a complete Israeli withdrawal from the territories it captured 40 years ago. The demands come in preparation for a U.S.-hosted Middle East Peace Conference next month. Shelling continued today in an area of northwest Pakistan where battles between troops and militants have killed as many as 250 people. The last 5 days of clashes in the North Waziristan region near the Afghan border have been the deadliest in more than 6 years. U.S.-led coalition and Afghan forces captured a major ammunition cache in the Zabul province of southern Afghanistan earlier this week. 100 RPGs and more than 150,000 rounds of machine gun ammunition were seized. The London Telegraph reports that the tables have turned in what was once Iraq's most dangerous province. Anbar locals are now identifying or turning in al-Qaeda operatives, pointing out hidden weapons caches, and cheering on U.S. troops.